all my heaven.
I know.
I paid attention. I think, wait a minute.
Exactly. You went to a county versus
you
went to the
county. I don't know what it was, but I was about to get on the phone and call one of you guys and say things are okay, but I said, oh, that's odd then. It's nothing to do with
it. It seems to be affecting the whole state, though.
All right, looks like we're at the appointed hour in time to get started. If we can wrangle our three strays over here. Welcome, everyone, to the meeting of the Community Impact Fund Board for September 7th, 2017. We're excited to get into the projects and talk about all the great things happening in the various parts of the state. We'll begin with the staff briefing, and we'll turn some time over to Candace for that at this time.
Hello, Board. It's good to be here. This is the September 7th meeting, in case you haven't looked at your calendar yet. It is the third review meeting for the first trimester of fiscal year 17-18. The upcoming meeting dates, there's a blue sheet in your red folder. Of special interest will probably be that the meeting in November is November 9th. Please put that on your calendar. I believe I notified you of that, but it is in Moab. Also, that we have called the facility to check on their ability for Wi-Fi since we're going digital, and she says it's pretty good. So we hope we have a good experience with the Wi-Fi there because we will be digital. This is the sign-up sheet for the Moab meeting, November 9th. And also, the rainbow sheet is always there. Now, this only reflects fiscal year 16. So when you see Carbon County as the second one, that was as of fiscal year 16. When 17 is closed out, you will have a new rainbow sheet, and it will reflect the current revenue first placers. The financial review is on page 1-1-1. All the items in yellow, are they listed in yellow for yours? Well, okay, the new projects are listed there. We have 9 new projects. There will be one project for supplemental requests.
Candace, question here.
Before you get too far, I have some unofficial business concerning this blue sheet. Down there on June 7th and 8th, there's a funding meeting and a retreat. Last Thursday, not this very day today, but last Thursday, the Utah Symphony came to Bluff and did a concert at Bluff. The Desert Rose Inn has expanded about double to triple the rooms. They have a large convention area. They have a great indoor swimming pool. They have a secret garden. I'm going to put in a bid. I don't know what we have to bid for the retreat for Bluff at the Desert Rose in June. I think this board would really enjoy themselves down there. So I'm the first bidder.
No, Commissioner Mattson was the first bidder.
Okay,
I started bidding with 1,000. Who gives 2,000?
Commissioner Mattson, what say you?
Somewhere in the next 4 years, let's go to Bluff.
That new facility and
may I speak up?
Yes,
if
Commissioner
Lytle.
If you
come to Daggett County, we certainly have a place to make that work as well. So
you'll be secure, right?
Pardon?
I will.
But
if
with
you will send me your information about the policy retreat options, we will let the board make final decision. We'll find out who has what, when. And if they want to really treat staff really, really nice, it'd be great.
Well, you could always visit the new less than 100,000 acre Bears Ears Monument.
We do appreciate the options for the policy retreats. Staff does like it when somebody really wants to have it. And we do appreciate those. Please, I will send out an email with information that needs to be accommodated, and then you can send us and the board all of the options, and we'll let the board decide. Thank you, Commissioner Adams, though. Will the symphony be playing that night?
Trouble already.
Can you line that symphony up?
If you can get the symphony there.
Done. You didn't say the Utah Symphony. You just said the symphony, right?
The cowboy.
We've got Corral. A symphony of one.
Bruce
me.
For that one.
Bovine symphony.
No, this is great. Thank you so much. We also have a request. I'm back to discussing the finances.
Yes, finances.
Okay. Request for special consideration from the town of Huntsville. This is just a change of scope, so there is no money. That's why it shows zeros. We're still in a look for how you want to view the outstanding revenues and grants. Now I have it listed that $10 million that we put back in has not been allocated anywhere. So if we just look at the amount without the return of from the infrastructure fund, the mineral lease revenue was $6,837,000 to accommodate all of the applications that have come in for this trimester, which would put us $5,514,000 in the red. But you will see that you do have money to allocate, and if you want to specify when you make the final vote in October, when we fund all of these, who comes out of that new money, because it was a requirement in the return that $5 million would be awarded as loan, that is up to the board. So we will make that determination in October. Makes sense?
When we do that, this is coming out of the infrastructure fund balance?
Yeah, this was the returned money.
Yeah.
It was $10 million, and $5 million has
to
be.
So will that reduce that $57
million? If you say everything comes out of the new money, then you've accommodated your $5 million at least has to be loan.
Right.
But that's up to the board when the final authorization is made in October.
But what I'm saying is, when we allocate that, that reduces that 57 down to 52.
Oh, that's already been reduced.
That's on that. Okay,
yeah,
that's what I want
that's
to know.
The $10 million is up there in the revenue.
Right.
So yes, you looking good. Any questions about the finances? I will turn the time back to the chairman.
Great. Thank you. Before we get to introductions and the rest of the agenda, last month we did kind of a brief recognition of our former chairman right to my left here. But we actually have the gift this time. It was kind of on short notice. We know we recognize Jay Potter, departing board member, with a gift, and since Keith did such a great job for a few years wrangling all of you folks for and keeping you in order and helping move the program along to great success, we wanted to recognize him formally, as we typically do, for departing board members and for the great job he did as a chairman. So I have this gift this time, and I want to present it to Keith.
Yay. I'm going to open it just for fun. It's quite weighty, like many of the decisions we have to make.
It looks like a gold bar, the wrapping paper.
It's a nice paper.
Is it gold bar?
That's a box. Uh-oh, this is where it gets tricky. Someone has put tape on the box. You want the blow-by-blow?
Yeah. The plastic wrapping.
Wait a minute. There's a box inside of the box. It's a nice cherry wood, anyway, dark wood box.
Oh, wow.
A lovely clock and a little plaque with a name on it. So thank you, each and every one of you. Certainly one of the highlights of my career has been working with you on this board and the great things that we've accomplished. And I look forward to continuing to work with you in my current capacity to move things forward and help rural Utah. So thank you. Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure working with Keith on a daily basis. He's just great to work with. I've known him a long time. We've worked together a long time, and he does a great job in everything that he's assigned to do. With that, we'll go on with introductions. We'll start with staff over there, and Gail, and we'll just go around the horn.
Gail Gardner with Housing and Community Development Division.
Tom Roberts with the Attorney General's Office. I act as legal advisor to the board.
Jack Lytle, representing Uinta Basin Association of Counties.
Commissioner Tudor Ogden, Sevier County, representing the Six County Association of Governments.
Bruce Adams, San Juan County Commissioner, representing Southeastern Utah AOG.
Jim Matson, Kane County Commission, and I represent the Five County Association of Government.
David Damshin, State Treasurer, representing all Utah taxpayers.
Jonathan Hardy, also representing all Utah taxpayers, but specifically the designee for the Executive Director of Department of Workforce Services as the chair of the board.
Keith Heaton with the Community Development Office.
Candace Powers, Fund Manager, Mineral Lease Funds.
Nagi Zanadi, representing UDOT Commission.
Sonia Norton, I'm the Vernal City Mayor, and I represent Uinta County.
Ron Winterton, Commissioner of Duchesne County, representing Duchesne County.
Steve Farrell, representing the Board of Water Resources.
Greg Galecki, representing Water Quality Board.
Thank you, and we do want to especially recognize Commissioner Lytle. He was recently confirmed by the Senate, went through the arduous process of getting confirmed as a new member on the board, and Commissioner Winterton was also reconfirmed, now representing Duchesne County instead of the AOG, which was his former representation. So good job on making it through that fun process, and we welcome you to the board.
Was the commissioner advised that to fully complete the process, he's buying everyone lunch today? Isn't that part of our hazing process? And a feat of strength.
I represent all the taxpayers. I might have a difficult time.
That's great. Okay, so our next item on the agenda is the approval of minutes. You'll recall last meeting we had some discussion about the July 6th minutes. We postponed a vote on those. There have been some revisions. They were sent out. I think we got more specific on who was making the specific comments. Any questions on that? Okay. Yes, Nagi.
I have some just corrections, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman.
This is for the July 6th minutes?
Yes.
Okay.
On page 15... I didn't know, maybe I fell asleep, but I didn't know Mrs. Damson showed up to vote or discuss the matter, because on paragraph 5th or 6th, there's a Mrs. Damson showed up and asked about the executive director's salary.
It does say that.
I don't know if Dave's supposed to be here or his wife was supposed to be here, so that's the one correction on the July 15th, July, page 15. On the August 1, last paragraph, it says that the applicant has received the commitment of the $1,700,000 rather than period. Should be the comma right there for the separation of the zeros.
Okay, one more time.
Page on the August 1, page 9, last paragraph.
9, okay.
It says the applicant has received the commitment of $1,700,000 right after there's a period. It's supposed to be comma.
Yeah.
On page 11... we have on the paragraph 6, master plan focusing on trails and corridors. There's no end there.
Got it.
With that corrections and with the compliment to Chris Reed for the wonderful job that she does, taking these minutes and remind us every month what we did last month. And I make a motion to approve the minutes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, a motion from Mr. Zanotti to approve the minutes with those amendments as suggested.
I second it.
And a second from Commissioner Winterton. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, both of those sets of minutes are passed. Yes, Mayor Norton.
Sorry. I had a question. I noticed throughout the minutes sometimes it says the board asked this or the board, and it doesn't state a specific person. Is there a reason we do it that way?
Usually there's a consensus when we're discussing projects that the board is asking those questions. Okay. Because we don't put every, it's not a transcript. It's just, this is what the board said, this is what the applicant said. So it says the board and the applicant. But on the discussions, we added who said what in order to clarify what the discussion was with the board.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, we ready to dive into projects? There it is. Unanimous approval. Okay, first on the docket, Duchesne County Water Conservancy District. I think one change on your summary, which is reflected accurately in the application. This is for a $137,500 grant. So we'd invite Duchesne County Water Conservancy District. And we have a little bit of a different setup here than we typically have had, so it looks like you're going to be standing and talking to us. You can sit to the side if you want to take a break, but that's where you'll be answering the questions. So we will turn some time over to Candace for the briefing on this project, and then we'll ask Duchesne County to speak to us.
This is the Duchesne County Water Conservancy District application for water resource plan. The request is for $137,500 grant. Those numbers had changed, and they did inform the DEQ of those corrected numbers. We corrected it in the application. On the agenda, it says 125, but it is 137,500. The applicant is contributing $20,000 in cash. The water districts, Central Utah Water, Ballard City, Ballard Water and Sewer Improvement, Uinta County, and Moon Lake water users are also contributing funding to this, so they do have their match, and the board may want to ask what is the status of each of those matches in order to come up with the 50% cash match. This is a plan to identify and develop future water supplies, municipal, agricultural, and industrial, and I would ask the question, how does this tie in with the Victory Pipeline Project, which also distributes water from Starvation Reservoir? And does Duchesne County Water Conservancy have actual bids yet? And what is the useful life of this plan? And we'll turn the time over to the applicant.
You want to introduce yourselves for the record?
My name is Clyde Watkins. I'm the current general manager for the Duchesne County Water Conservancy District. And with me here is Rex Harrison. He's our engineer with Porox Engineering. One, our chairman, Maureen Henderson, was not able to attend. She had a family emergency came up, and so we told her that we would go ahead and show up without her. And I hope you all will understand that. It's not that it's not important, okay? As we go through some of this, as we got to looking, I hadn't thought about the Victory Pipeline, but we'll definitely add that. As we got looking at the current resources that are in the Duchesne County area, we obviously met with the commissioners. We met with all of the local ag people. We met with all the community people for representing both the municipal, more so, a little bit of the industry. So we covered all of those bases that we needed. We currently have three plans that have already been completed in previous times, and they're probably briefly mentioned there. There was one that was done with the culinary water. There was one previous, and that one was done in like 2006. Previous to that one, there was a plan done on the Green River study on our water rights there. And then previous to that one, there was a master plan done with the ag water, including all the waters in the county. So these plans that we currently have, they're not outdated, but they're definitely dated. I hate to use the word outdated because that does sound a little bit odd. But they're definitely dated, and so either a lot of projects have changed, some projects have been completed, or the water that is there has changed drastically to where some of those plans would not be beneficial, but maybe new plans need to be put together and new ideas to come forward. Duchesne County participated very heavily in helping us with the Victory Pipeline, and so we want to meet the needs of Duchesne County when it comes to it, and we want to do that both in all three areas, the ag waters and the M&I waters both. As it came to it, and we got to looking at it, though, and you see in your map, we had to extend a little bit of an area. It did include other people besides just the Duchesne County. Moon Lake Water Users, who's one of the participants that you have listed there, Moon Lake Water Users is one of the larger irrigation companies that are represented in Duchesne County. And in that, their waters extend into Uinta County. Western part of Uinta County kind of sits in a little bit of a, I got to be careful how to say this, but it's a little bit of a hard spot for some of those people in western Uinta County. They're not under a conservancy district. They're in what is called like a Moon Lake exclusion. Long words, it'd take a process to understand that. But they're not currently represented by a conservancy district, Uinta County Water Conservancy. So by including them, they came forward, Moon Lake Water Users, Ballard City, Ballard Water Improvement District, they all came to us because they are a part of us. They are a part of the waters of Duchesne County, and they're in that, whether it be ag water or even the potential of something with the Victory Pipeline at one time, because they were initially listed with the Victory Pipeline with your municipal water. So we wanted, as they came forward, that's why that amount changed from the original amount that Candace was talking about of the $125,000. Those amounts changed because each one of those entities started coming forward and like, we want to be a participant. And Uinta County came forward with it at that time and says, hey, we are having a hard time being able to really say what those people's needs are in the western part of the county. Could you help us? And let's include those people in it. And so that's the reason that the plan was extended into the western side of Uinta County, hence why we made the updates to the part of it. Hopefully that kind of will give you a little bit of that part. When it came to what's kind of been done, and you look at all the changes, there's changes that have been made, and there's changes that are coming forward. Some of the changes that are coming forward, one, Central Utah Water is going to do a study of Starvation Reservoir. They're currently and actively working on that through their own means. When they get done with that study, we're hoping to do this in conjunction with the master plan that we're planning to do. We want to be able to take their useful yields or their necessary knowledge and information, and we want to apply it so that if we need to be able to utilize other waters, blocks of water, project water, whatever the case may need to be, it'll be included as part of their new study that will take place with the Starvation Reservoir. And that includes a little bit tiny portion, most likely will sift into like Strawberry Reservoir also. So it also brings in those. So anytime we have somebody in the basin approach Central Utah Water for help and assistance, Central Utah says, well, go ask Duchesne County Water Conservancy District, how does this fit in with their master plan? Well, if we don't include all of those and some of the new studies, it's not going to fit into Central's part with our master plan. So that's why it became evident that we needed to move forward and being able to go that way. When it comes to the Victory Pipeline, when you ask, the Victory Pipeline would currently be able to even expand more of the uses of it if the yield on Starvation says there's other waters that are now available that weren't currently allocated for. We have already told them verbally that we would like to make, a consideration at this time that we want to be considered so that we can be one of the first ones to be able to say we would like to now start taking and looking at other marketing water from whatever blocks they determine is left. So that would come into play with the Victory Pipeline and being able to secure those water needs that you all funded with the Victory Pipeline. Instead of us going out and leasing the water that we currently do with it, We could actually, at some point in time, if we needed to, purchase that water and have long-term commitments to fulfill those needs. It played a heavy part in it. Yes, by all means it did, Candace. Okay? Anything, Rex, that you're thinking of?
Just that this is a higher scale master plan than you're probably used to seeing. It's a comprehensive master plan. Waters that are still under investigation as to whether or not they can be used. We're working hand in hand with Central Utah Water. They have operated their system for the last 10 years on a lot less diversion from the Uinta Basin than they have rights for. And their reservoirs don't draw down as much as they thought. So they've been very conservative in the early planning from the 60s till now. And they're looking at maybe we actually have more water, blocks of water, that we could make available. And Duchesne County water is, water is a premium. It's hard to find. We're in competition with agriculture to find new water. And that's a double-edged sword sometimes. You don't want to eliminate it to provide for growth, but yet we need to find it from somewhere. And if there's unused waters, that's primarily what we're looking at, is wringing the towel out as dry as we can get it and see what sources of supply, if there are new sources that we can use. The county has about 32 active water systems, I think, as Lisa mentioned. That's culinary water. Probably over 46 different canal company diversions, not to mention what we're looking at with oil field and the industry out there. It's helped, I guess, the source of these funds. What we're looking at is trying to provide means that they will continue to be available and possibly expanded by providing that industry the water that they need, especially in these fracking processes they're undertaking now. It's a comprehensive water master plan that ties in with each community. At the end, there will be a capital facilities plan will include prioritization of what projects the district needs to look at for potential funding or partial funding or at least support in the future. So it gives them a good tool. Hopefully, we'll look at a 20-year span. In life, all things get dated. So that's their goal at this time is to redefine what their needs are and what their resources are and how they can best be put to use.
Okay, this time let's go to the board for questions on this particular project.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Zanotti.
Clyde, how many of these 32 water resources that you have are the private and how many are public water companies?
Probably a question for state drinking water.
So are they participating in this particular juncture, like in the study, or?
I do not include
okay. That's okay. And in this particular study that you're going to be doing, do you have a plan for the reuse water in the future for, like, golf course, that you don't use the same water, culinary water, to water in the golf courses or some of those lands for the...
I guess when we go through with our master plan, if that's something that we determine that we need to address, that is something we could. That isn't something we had looked at this time yet, not quite at that. A lot of the other people already, like the bigger entities, already hold that water, and it's kind of not really something that we as a conservancy district can really, I guess you'd say, put our finger on and manage them in those type of ways. but you are there. It is something that could definitely be included in recommending things to those entities that already have the water rights and are already actively using their stuff. It would be a good recommendation by all means. I agree.
Well, most of the communities in the basin right now, or at least in Duchesne County, are non-discharging of their wastewater, which means they're in treatment cells, open evaporation, so there is no discharge. I think that's for most of them that have a facility.
Yes, it is.
Okay. So the Upper Country water system is different from the Moon Lake, or they are covering different areas of the Duchesne County?
No, the Upper Country Water District, is that the one you're talking about?
Uh-huh.
The Upper Country Water District takes in the seven little communities kind of up northwest of Roosevelt and north of Duchesne, you might say. And so they take that, they've got their own service or users area, their delivery area. They do set totally with inside of it, yes.
Do they have uniform water rate, or they all separate whatever they can, whatever the expenses will be for the region?
Most of them have their own individual rates. Upper Country Water is looking at redoing their rates, though, I've been told.
Okay.
They asked me to come to one of their meetings.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Commissioner Ogden.
I was wondering what the timeline of completing this project. Have you got a timeline on this? How long this
is? It's a one-year project. That's what we've initially scoped out is a one-year. A lot of public interaction, trying to define needs up front, so they'll be heavily involved in meetings with the public, the water users, and the managers of those.
And Central kind of, we talked about a master plan previously. Central had talked about doing a study on some of their stuff previous to that, but it's kind of, we're hoping to all come along at the same time as the intended goal, so that we can make use of their study and their yield and being able to look at the possibility of the Victory Pipeline, but also in the other stuff, we want to make our information known to them, and we want to be able to use their information in return. And their study is hopefully going to be completed by the end of next year also.
Yes, Commissioner Lytle.
Knowing the area a little bit, and the intermingledness of the lands as well as the waters with the tribe, what's that looking like? And then as the geographics start trying to figure out what's the scope of the geography of it, you were somewhat...
Well,
are you talking Deep Creek? Are you talking all the way over to Tridell? Are you talking across the White Rocks, Uinta River, or are you talking
It would take in most, it doesn't go quite to Tridell, because Tridell is part of the Uinta County Water Conservancy District, so we won't go into anything into those boundaries at that point, unless we can go into those boundaries because the waters do intermingle. And if we find that is the case as we do some of this plan, then that is the part where Uinta County has said that they would like to make sure that, one, Uinta County did it as part of helping that western part that wasn't in Uinta County Water Conservancy District, but also it says, hey, if we find other things as we do this master plan, we want to be able to bring that knowledge back to them. And without a study, we couldn't bring that knowledge to them to find out exactly. A lot of people, when you talk to them, they're not sure where the Moon Lake water users' boundaries really are. Some people seem to pay taxes and some don't. We want to better define it, and I think we've defined it on the map very well.
Okay, and back to the tribal water rights and the different issues in there.
We've asked the tribe if they would like to make, they're trying to work on some plans and some updates of their own going on through at this time. And so we've asked the tribe if they would like to put part of theirs. We've told them that we will include parts of something that they would like to put in ours, if they want to give a condensed version of what their water needs are, what their water demands are going to be. Yes, we want to include them, and so we've already made that offer to them have that included.
We'll be involving them on discussions, but as far as planning, we're not planning for the tribe.
No, I wasn't inferring that.
It's never worked for it from the outside, so
no,
it come from there.
But because of that intermingledness,
it is very,
I think it's an important part of your discussion.
Yes, very much so.
Yes, Commissioner Farrell. Councilor Farrell.
Individual water companies and canal companies has their own rights, and some of them are more superior than others. Are you going to get them all to cooperate on a master plan and work together and maybe share water rights?
I'm not sure about some of the sharing of some of the water rights, but I think as when it comes to a part, one thing that that all of those individual water companies are going to be able to do is they're going to be able to give us their goals, their thoughts, their ideas, and their maybe intended projects or what they'd like to see done. And what we've encouraged them to do is we're trying to encourage all of them to break that down. Instead of saying we want to build huge reservoirs and that's our only thing we want to do, let's talk about small projects, be it $300,000, $800,000. We want them to even do small projects so that we get water conservation. We conserve the waters they currently have so they get more water. Sometimes if you conserve enough water in some canals, you've almost built your reservoir in itself. It's the same as building a reservoir if you conserve enough water. And so that's the point of that part. And that's the avenue that we've took with each one of the canal companies. Okay.
And what kind of response do you get from each one of them?
Very favorable. Believe it or not, it is very favorable.
There doesn't seem to be, over a history, that much animosity between canal companies out there. Mm-hmm.
That's different than every place else in the state.
Now, a few other waters we won't talk about, but canal companies is very good. Let's live that way.
Mr. Galecki.
And I'm going to set this up for a second. So acknowledging that we're in the second driest state in the nation and coming from rural Utah, I fully am aware about the importance of water. My question is more both to the staff and the applicant is that $275,000 in 1 year is a lot of money. And through the application, I really don't have a sense, like if it was my money, I don't have a good sense of how that money is being spent. It's part of me, my general sense is that, we got $100,000. Now we have a $200,000 project. Did the project fit the funding, or is your project, which comes first? It seems like I don't, and especially, like it mentioned that, engineering costs about $154 an hour. I work with a lot of engineering firms, and that's a large cost. So can you explain briefly, I know it's not in the application, but how specifically is the money going to be spent engineering-wise?
I could maybe address some of those, Clyde, if you want to finish. We went through a selection with the board and representatives of those who were funding it. We didn't know what their funding was. We knew generally what the scope, well, we had a pretty good idea what the scope was. We were not that far off from what their available funds were. In fact, we had to trim down a little bit to come to an agreement. We were selected on a qualification-based selection, QBS. Our team is comprised of a lot of senior members. I pulled together, senior members that had prior experience and knowledge of what was completed on the national scale, what was called CUPCA, or the Central Utah Completion Act. In 1992, we had a team which I was a member of, that studied a number of waters in the Uinta Basin, trying to see if there was, under the guidelines of the Bureau of Reclamation, projects that would qualify for inclusion in Central Utah Project, with redefined criteria for selection and environmental analysis as well. We pulled together the some of the remaining team that had done that work, and that's where the experience came from. I think that's why we were selected. I guess Clyde could talk to it, but yeah, it is more senior people.
So what specifically, like, okay, so for senior engineers, well, I won't get into rates, but, you know, the senior people that I wind up paying is probably 20% less than that. But independent of that, what specific things other than meetings are you doing? Like, what parts of the projects, you know, concepts? Is it?
Well, I did send a detailed scope out to the staff. I don't know if that got in your packet, but.
Is it GIS? Is it mapping? Is it modeling?
We are developing a GIS database with this. We've got our own vernacular for it. But once it's pulled together, anyone, any citizen or group with a available password to get into it and see what is planned, what the priority of that information is, and work with the district on evaluating future projects within their own.
So to the CIB staff, when as billing comes in, is it pretty easy? Because it's from here, it's pretty broad as far as applicable billing. Is it pretty straightforward? And I'm just confused.
Gail wants to answer that question, I can see.
I'm sorry, would you repeat it?
Sure. So as billing comes in, does it just come as study project and it's not, you know, since things aren't outlined specifically of how the project is going, is it just a general time spent?
Well, the invoices are from the engineering, so they list out.
So do you know what the deliverables are on a study, on a study plan like this?
I'm not sure.
Okay.
There are milestones that we will be meeting and monitoring with the district and allocating budget to it, so we'll be able to evaluate budget and progress together with the district.
Okay. Sorry to put you on the hot seat. It's just that I, you know, from an engineering perspective, I like to see exactly what's going on. And it's just, oh, we got this study for, you know, $250,000 and, you know, a promise at the end. And so, okay, that's all I have.
Candace.
In the application, there is a memorandum of agreement between Duchesne Water Conservancy District and Central Utah Water. It will list things that will coincide with that study. And there is a plan proposal which has been provided. We will monitor those costs as they come through, but it does look like it has a good quantity of deliverables.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. Yes, Mr. Zanotti.
Clyde, in year 2000, you had received $25,000 grant for the study. 4 years later on, you have asked for $100,000 grant to study. What is the useful life of this particular plan? Is it going to be another 4 years before you come back again for another study, or are you going to be finding another source, I hope?
That's the reason why we're hoping that, one, that this study is very usable and that it does contain some better, more data that is going to break down very much into projects. Like I say, we want large-scale projects, but we want a lot of small-scale projects. And I'm not sure that that has been done in some of the other plans to the same extent that we're wanting to try to do, and for the reasons we are. And we're wanting to do that both with all three waters, Ag and M&I, on both issues like that. So to going forward like that, can I say that we would never be back? I don't know that I would dare promise that, but can I say that we are probably trying to look for other avenues? That's the reason why we actually went to Central to start with, and Central, because of us both wanting it, they wanted to become a heavy contributor. That was either there whether we went to the Community Impact Board or not. So we are looking to other avenues, and As far as the Conservancy District, we're trying to change the way that some previous people had been utilizing their needs. Let's just put it that way. And we're trying to actually set things into motion and put things aside. But more than ever, we're trying to look forward down the future to help recover some of these things you're talking about. And I think that's very evident that we've got people that are willing to help support other things. When you look at the other entities that came forward wanting to be a part of our plan like they did, they can see that we're wanting to make this a very useful one, something that's going to be a workable plan that they can all utilize but also be proud of at the same time. So we don't want a plan that sits on the shelf.
For that, what is the status of 20,000? And what is the status of 117,500? Are they in place already, or are you going to have to get it after approval from this entity?
We've told them it's already approved. All of Central's is already approved at their board, and every single one of those other entities has, each one of them has approved that money in their in a regular meeting by formal motions, and everything has went through. The money is there. All we have to do is send them an invoice. And we've actually worked with our legal counsel, so we have an invoice that is ready to go to be sent out to obtain the monies as we need them. So we do have that worked up.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask Kyle to address the last question? Is that okay?
Yep.
In his assessment, or their assessment, he says, overall endorsement ? Why is that?
Can you come up to the podium and speak? Thank you. And state your name for the record.
My name's Kyle Slaughter with the Rural Planning Group. That was primarily based on the costs associated with the study, both the hourly and the size, which, you know, are two different things. We looked at the hourly rate, and I spent a lot of time doing some research with UDOT, talked to DDW and a couple other entities, and those numbers seemed to check out with the other places. I didn't have a chance to update my my review in that respect. The overall scope of the project, I'm not a water engineer. I don't have that experience, so that was something that I wanted to bring to the board's attention. That this is a bigger cost than we've seen with other studies, but at the same time, I think they've addressed that it's potentially different. So that was why.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, Commissioner Winterton.
Maybe just a comment, knowing the area. For those that don't know, this Water Conservancy District was created about 20 years ago, after the fact that we had all of these other irrigation companies. They're basically the big brothers that's tasked to be over all of this, and I think that in the long run that this is going to save CIB some money going forward, because we see each entity coming in wanting a planning grant for this or that. I would suggest that should that happen, that we need to refer back to a study such as this, is how does this relate? Have you looked at their plan? Because that also holds their feet to the fire, that they need to be communicating to these guys, making sure that this is going to be a plan that it does take in Uinta County. Uinta County in this area has not been able to fend for themselves, nobody looking after them. And with that being said, I would make a motion that we approve this grant as been presented, because they do have the match money, and I see that the overall good is that it's going to save us money.
So a motion on the table from Commissioner Winterton to approve a grant of $137,500. Is there a second?
Second
motion.
Okay. So I'll give that to Councilman Farrell as a second on that motion. Is there further discussion to that motion? Yes, Commissioner Lytle.
I think the big thing to focus here is the comprehensiveness, and it's more of a question. Is the comprehensiveness over an area that's larger than the district boundary by going into the stuff in Uinta County? Is that part of the district as it's been defined typically?
The western part of Uinta County is not part of our district. We've made the offer to them that if they would like
it's
to.
It's a no man's land.
That's my point. It's a no man's land.
Uinta County Water Conservancy District does not cover this area either.
Right. And the focus is the drinking water in particular.
Well, the irrigation system all comes out of Duchesne County also.
Right.
And that's part of this study. What are the needs there?
Wonderful. All right. Thank you.
It's the waters that head water in Duchesne County.
I understand.
Further questions? Yes, further discussion. Commissioner Ogden.
Make one note where we've talked about the engineering costs. I would bring that attention to you folks and try to make sure that you can bring that down within where everybody else's engineering is in other projects related to the same kind of work.
If there's no further discussion, we'll call for the vote. All in favor of the motion for a $137,500 grant to be put on the priority list, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Are there any opposed?
Nay.
Mr. Galecki opposes.
I oppose as well.
And as does Treasurer Damption. Everybody else in favor that is present. So that'll be placed on the priority list. I guess our funding meeting is next month, right? So, yes, we'll have some further discussion next month on this. Thank you.
And we will be here. Thank you very much. We appreciate your time and everything you do for us.
To Candace now for a summary on our next applicant, Orangeville City.
Orangeville City is presenting an application for a flood protection study. They have $13,300 in applicant cash. They're asking CIB for $13,300 in CIB funding, grant funding. They indicate that this is a study in preparation for the 100-year storm event. My question would be status of applicant cash. They indicate that canals have been eliminated, which have historically accommodated excessive water events. This study will identify potential drainages into the city, come up with measures, and provide preliminary costs for mitigation. On 3-2-10 and 11, it provides a good synopsis of the study, and an estimate is presented on 3-2-12. 3-2-13 represents a council meeting. Was there a public hearing for this project?
Yes, there was.
That's it.
Okay. Do you want to introduce yourselves for the record?
My name is Kent Wilson, City Council member for Orangeville.
I'm Merrill Johansson with Johansson Total Engineering.
So this is, let's just go to the board for questions on this. This is kind of a smaller dollar project. I think it's pretty straightforward. You did confirm that there has been a public hearing on this.
Yes, it was in June.
June, okay. To the board for questions.
Comment is that if you notice, you notice how the money is going to be spent. So.
So, question is the applicant cash. Where is the source of that?
Our source is going to come from our budget. We've set aside $13,300 to match, hopefully, funding from CIB. 2 years ago, we had a series of storms that came through that opened our eyes to the risks that we have. And so with these canals, we have the option of taking up the easement, and these canals surround our city, or we can let those easements lapse, and we need to find out if, by doing that, if it exposes us to more risk. What might happen if those canals go away? And... So we have three choices: do nothing, and respond to crisis if that happens, or take over the leases and go as it has been in the past. And then we assume, as a city, we assume ongoing cleanup of those canals and maintenance, and on a small budget that concerns us. Or we thought of maybe putting some debris basins in. And then you have a high upfront cost, but then you have zero maintenance after that. And so we're hoping this study would give us that information so we can make an intelligent decision.
So has your city used these easements for those canals in the past? Or is this going to be the first time?
Our local canal company has those easements in place right now today. They're going to use those canals until 2019. So we have 2 years to... decide if we want to assume those easements. As I understand it, there are laws on the books now that have been produced in the last 6 or 7 years that would allow that trans transition of easement from the canal company to the cities. It's just we're not sure if that's the right answer for us to do or if we want to assume liability or maintenance. And so we're hoping this will answer some of those questions.
Mr. Roberts, can they use a prescriptive easement in this case? Can they use prescriptive easement to from the canal company to the city since they have used it in the past?
I'm not sure. I mean, you know, what he's talking about is some statutory procedures that allow for the taking over when the canal is abandoned, I believe. So
I think Representative Matheson passed legislation 2 years ago allowing the irrigation companies to give them easements to the municipalities for flood control.
Okay.
Let's go to Commissioner Ogden.
I have a question regarding either you go to detention dams or you have canals existing. You're still going to have a maintenance issue regardless of either way because you're going to have to remove the sediments and other debris. Have you thought about that ongoing?
Yeah, all of the construction costs and maintenance costs for each alternative will be analyzed in the study as well so they can see what the best decision at that time would be going forward. But, yeah, both of those would require some maintenance, so they'd be able to look at that.
Yes, Councilman Farrell.
I understand that this study will tell you whether it's better to do the debris basins or maintain the canals.
Yeah. Or any other. We'll look at several.
Or a combination of all.
Yeah.
I'll make a motion.
Yes, motion.
Move to approve as presented.
Second on the motion.
So there is a motion from Mr. Galecki to approve a grant of $13,300 and a second from Mr. Zanotti and that to be placed on the priority list. Any further discussion to that motion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Carries unanimously. We'll see you next month.
Thank you very much.
Go to Candace for our next applicant, Green River City.
This is project number 3, Green River City. They do have a USDA $50,000 cash grant. This is for a new public safety building, 12,000 square feet. In 3-3-19, it indicates in the minutes that Mayor Brady has resurrected this plan again. On October 2nd, 2014, Green River presented a funding request for a public safety building. The public safety building was larger than this application is. And at that time, the board had a few issues with it. Not only was there site cleanup required because it was at an old Chevron station, it was also, it seemed to be quite a bit larger than was necessary for the area, according to the board. Their concerns were the location, as I said. The proposed location was unaddressed, contamination issues. The board suggested that the project be redefined. I believe that's what has happened here. That was back in 2014. They are back here. There's a picture on 3-3-13. is that the ambulance and search and rescue building that might need an upgrade? Multi-purpose use. Would this public safety building will be multi-purpose in use. Yet Green River will self-fund the environmental cleanup, so that addresses one of the issues that the had. They aren't putting applicant cash in here, but that will be a substantial cost to Green River. It's in the minutes. This is also going to address the possible major energy industry locating to Green River. If you want to let us know what you know. That would be fun. But the project is now a 12,000-square-foot building. It will house several of the
public safety issues, EMS, and we will let the applicant discuss what they did to accommodate the board's concerns last time.
You want to introduce yourselves for us?
I am Pat Brady, Mayor of Green River.
I'm Kendrick Thomas with Jones and DeMille Engineering.
And it's a pleasure to be back to resurrect this building. And I do want to thank you and your staff for the help and support that they gave us and suggestions that they gave us. And, yes, we have two of the main concerns was the building was too large and the cost was too high. And we have reduced the footage by 5,200 square feet by redesigning the building and reducing the training area. And the cost has been reduced by about $580,000. We definitely need this building still. We needed it 3 years ago, and we still need it. If you look at some of the pictures, our current fire department, we had to put a side door in to get one of our vehicles out of the weather. We still have a huge water truck that sits outside all the time, and the tires are just rotting on the vehicle because of the heat, and they've been sitting there for, oh, I think we've had it for 4 years now, and there's just not enough room in the building that we have. The EMS building is very, very old, and as ambulances have gotten bigger and bigger, they barely fit into the building that they have now, and they really don't have a training room either. So we do not have adequate facility for our fire and EMS. And we have, so you know, we have talked to the county, and they, most of the, if not all the cities in our county have built their fire departments, including the EMS bays. And so that's what we are doing without county money also. Yes, it will be value added to the community because that building will be allowed to be used as public meetings, community meetings. We do not have a community center, so if there is a need, then we will open it up to the public as well. The $50,000 grant from the USDA is for equipment such as kitchen and office. It cannot be used for brick and mortar, and we have finished our application and sent that in. And even if we're pretty sure that they are going to grant us that money, but if they don't, then that is also covered in the contingency fund. And so what we are looking at, we believe we have satisfied all the questions that the board had before, and a lot of you were here. And as far as the money goes, $1,235,000 loan is a big loan, and we understand that. But I told Commissioner Adams that it was coming out of property tax, but it's also going to come out of resort tax, and we have plenty there. Last year we had $350,000 in resort tax money, so we'll not have a problem doing that. I also looked at some of our loans. And within 3 years, we will have $169,000 paid off. Three of those are CIB loans. One is water quality. Within 4 years, we'll have another $108,000 paid off. And that is another CIB loan and a DEQ loan. So within 4 years, we're going to have $278,000 available to us also. So you can see that we are good users of your money, and we have never had a problem repaying our loans and are very grateful for what you have given us. And this is a big project, one that we have. I've been mayor for 10 years, and I think from day one it was a topic because our buildings are so old and dilapidated that we needed something. And so I believe we are finally back with something that can be approved and that we can get to and start building. Any questions?
Let's go to questions from the board. Mr. Zanotti.
Mayor, could you please tell us about the site and the environmental cleanup process and how much it's going to take and where is the money coming from?
Yes. Thank you. We have, since that time, we have made a building, and it's actually premium oil, not a Chevron site. And across the other side of the highway, or Main Street, it was a Tesoro station, okay. And they had underground tanks, and that's all been cleaned up. And actually, our medical clinic bought that land for future use. And so on the other side of the street is the old premium oil building, and that needs to be torn down. And then that was above ground tanks, but it did have leaks, and we do have problems with the oil in it. And so we have a couple of ways that we can go, and we have looked at that. One is completely take it out, and all the dirt, all the contaminated soil, and that's what they did on the other side, and then put new dirt in and have it tested. You can also put in air vents, mm-hmm. where the building is going to be, but where actually I've been told where the asphalt is, you don't need that contaminated soil will be okay. But Kendrick might be able to answer that a little bit more. But we do have $500,000. Put aside for that specifically. We don't think it'll cost that much. We hope it won't, but we are prepared for that.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor. Kendra?
Commissioner Ogden. And
we'll yes, reading through your notes.
Oh, was there a follow-up comment to that?
Well, just back up what the mayor said, that there are a couple different options there as far as the cleanup. There's two studies that's been done on the site already. And those studies outline the different options. One is removal of the soil and replace with good soil. And then the other's a process called air sparging, and there's costs associated with each one of those identified in those reports.
And so, you know, we did get a grant from the EPA in Denver to come out, and they're the last ones that actually did a study for us.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Ogden.
Okay. Going through your notes in your public meeting, it sounds like to me, did you ever get the Emory County on board with the EMS to participate at all in this? It sounds like it was a little bit open-ended when we got through with your discussion.
Talking with the commissioners, it was not put in their budget and probably would not be put in their budget, mainly because they have not participated in any of their other cities. Even though it's run by the county. And so we are going to negotiate with them to help pay for electricity costs and water costs, utility costs for their part of the building.
But this project will have them involved in it as far as you'll be the owners of the building, but you will lease to them or part of their.
Well, we probably won't lease, but like I said, we will work out a deal where we may even put in, I think we've talked about this, two separate boxes so that we can see how much utilities they are using so that we don't bear the full cost.
Okay. All right.
Commissioner Winterton.
Mine's probably a follow-up. You said you had the EPA do the study. When they did that, did this qualify as a brownfield property in which there'd be some kind of funding for cleanup on that?
No, we've tried. That kind of funding is only for underground tanks, not for above ground. I don't understand the difference since it all goes in the ground, but that's what I have been told. We have been working with water quality since the other side worked with the DERR and got funding because it was underground, and they got the funding and money for that, but so far, we have not been able to find a way to get extra funding.
Okay, I was hoping maybe that'd be a way that you could save your portion of the money to pick up something else on the project.
Yeah.
The other question I had, it seems that if the county is responsible for the EMSs and that I would suggest that you let them build their own building and you worry about your needs, because if they're not going to step up to the plate, I don't know that we need to help them with their responsibilities. I think it's great that you guys are, but
Well, we've had that discussion and in the public meeting, and I definitely remember one of the citizens saying that it would not make sense to build a building like this and not include the EMS. Mm-hmm. Because their building is might even be worse than ours. And I agree, but we have tried to work with the county, and that's just not going to happen. And I don't even see them building a new building.
So along those lines, if the building falls apart, what happens to the EMS and the city doesn't pay for it?
I don't know.
I don't know. Odd that they don't.
But, you know, and that is a very legitimate point that we have tossed around. The council has tossed it around. But in my opinion, if we're going to build a building, public safety building, then we need to include both. Both of them need new space. They need, they both need a training facility. They both need offices to work out of. They need equipment rooms. You know, between now and the next funding meeting, come down. I'll give you a tour. I think that would definitely convince you that it is needed.
Okay. Let's go to let's go to Commissioner Adams. I know he had a question.
I have more of a comment than a question. Driving from southeastern Utah, I drive past Green River every time I come to Salt Lake, which is a couple times a week. And I want to talk a little bit about the demographics, but before I do that, I want to compliment the mayor. He's really tried to fit this project into a package that the CIB board asked him to do last time when he came in. It was a big building. These are some of the things that we deal with in small communities in rural Utah. We don't have a lot of money. We don't have a big tax base. We don't have the resources. That's why we're here as a CIB board, to help these small communities. Green River, as many of you know, if you've been down that way, is on the freeway. There's a lot of traffic, and it's getting more and more all the time. A lot of that traffic comes through Monticello on 191. But occasionally there's some pretty catastrophic events that happen on that roadway. And if it was you or me, I want the best. I want the best ambulance service. I want the best rescue people to come and take care of that event that I'm involved in. And I think everybody deserves that.
That's right.
If it's possible. And I think they've tried to plan for the future and plan for those kind of catastrophic events. Some of the traffic turns and goes down to Bullfrog. Some of it goes into Colorado, and some of it heads south through Moab and Monticello. They have some unique problems and or unique needs in Green River. This is not a want. This is a need. And I think that's something that the board has tried to delineate over the years, whether a community is coming in for a want or a need. This is really a need by this community. You know, Mayor Brady's pretty passionate about it. I don't know why he can't convince his brother on the county commission for the commission but be more cooperative and participative. But I don't want to know the family issues that are going on here. I just want to be supportive and speak in favor of the project, because I really think they've done their homework. I really think they've gone out on a limb. They're asking for a half grant and a half loan. It's a project that really is needed in a real small rural community that gets lots of pressure from people traveling through, people visiting, people trying to get out of the city. I have no idea why people want to get out of Salt Lake or Weber or Davis. I took a big deep breath this morning and it didn't kill me. I battled people on the Indianapolis 500 I-15 freeway yesterday. I have no idea why people want to get out of the city, but if you're going to travel down to these rural areas, you need those emergency services. And I like the idea that this can be a multiple-use facility if they need a place for meeting, if they need a kind of a community center concept that's big enough to handle something like that. So I really speak in favor of the project.
Mr. Mayor, might I suggest you help your friends at the county with a fundraiser? You and your brother could step into a boxing ring. I think I could bring in a lot of money.
It's his son.
He's my son,
it's
and he
son.
Would win.
It's his son. Okay.
It does seem to be the fundraiser du jour of the
I'd
day.
I'd be willing to make a motion when you get ready for a motion.
It's not an original idea, admittedly.
Mr. Galecki.
Actually, just one engineering question you can help me with. You know, less than a third of it. So the cost for the building is $130 per square foot. Yet only a third of it, less than a third of it, is finished. You know, being offices and such. And so, with the rest of it just being an outbuilding, why are the costs so high?
By finished, you mean you're saying like the apparatus bays wouldn't be a finished space?
Yeah.
They will have finishes and whatnot in them, as far as just walls being painted or what's needed to finish the space off. In those spaces, there's also a mechanical system that's needed for fresh air and a carbon monoxide detector and stuff. And so there are costs unique to those types of spaces as well. But the cost per square foot is just based on generally on from our experience on building similar facilities and what it takes in kind of a rural, little bit of an isolated place like Green River.
Yes, Mr. Zanotti.
Mayor, what is your budgeted annual maintenance for this building? Have you thought about that? Have you estimated anything? How you're going to take care of it? Supposedly we give the money to build, but who's going to take care of it?
I have not put thought into that because the fire department now takes care of its own building.
Okay.
And I am assuming they will do the same, and the EMS takes care of their building, and they will do the same. Now, here's another thing. Yes, it's the Green River Fire Department, but they get all their money from – we pay for their services, okay, but the county gets their ambulance – gets their fire trucks, right? So that's another reason, you know, that we're willing to do it all is because the county does buy and pay for the ambulance. They buy the equipment for the EMS and the firefighters and the trucks. So as far as maintenance, they the departments themselves maintain their own buildings. There hasn't, as far as I know, there isn't even a budget for maintenance for, or if you're talking about like cleaning and keeping it up.
Pay the bills, yeah.
Yeah, there has never been a bill. The fire department does its own upkeep. And EMS does too, just within the group themselves. So that's a good question. I've never been billed for maintenance because they keep it clean themselves. And for as old a building as it is, they have, what is it, Kingston Terrace, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have community parties in that old firehouse. They move the fire engines out, and it's always clean. They do a great job of cleaning up their own buildings.
So, Commissioner Lytle.
Do you have a fire district or any kind of special service district for the emergency services, or does the county?
We do not have special service.
No, it's all the town or the county doing.
But they have their group. They have their, every month the fire chiefs get together and have a meeting, but there's no specified district.
Okay.
And also for the EMS. They're working on it, but they do not have one, no.
Okay. And then the other part is to tell you,
congratulations, but coming from a small county and trying to figure out how to make all that work and those relationships, and your son is the mayor or the commissioner, and all of those things in a small county. But it sounds like you've taken the high road in that collaborative process of providing what the public needs or your constituents need in a public safety thing, and I applaud that.
Thank you. And just to clarify, my son resigned, not because of me. He is now the city administrator at Sitka, Alaska. Still a big move.
Yeah, close by. let's go to Commissioner Ogden and then Commissioner Adams.
I just want a second.
Oh, I guess we're going to Commissioner Adams first.
I just want a second, Commissioner Adams' motion.
But whatever he says, okay.
Okay, I'm going to make a motion. We approve this request as given to us today. 1,235,000 grant, $1,235,000 loan, 30 years at 2%.
Motion on the table from Commissioner Adams and a second from Commissioner Ogden for a $1,235,000 grant, a $1,235,000 loan, 30 years at 2%. We'll do some discussion. I think we will probably do some number crunching between now and the funding meeting, and we may look at some different scenarios where we keep the payment the same, but we may do drop of interest rate, raise the loan amount. We'll try to keep it in the ballpark. We'll have some discussion on that.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, further discussion. Mr. Zanotti.
Could we ask some kind of a specific maintenance plan for the next meeting to see what they're going to do, who's going to take care of it, and what kind of bills we're going to pay from what source?
Okay.
I just wanted to make a comment on that, if I could, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'm appreciative of the collaborative approach, and I'm also appreciative of Commissioner Adams' comments. When you have a life or death scenario, you have medical emergencies, MVAs, whatever, you don't really want to split hairs over who's paying for what, right? You want to get out there and solve the problem immediately with the best resources available. But I can see one of the pitfalls of the collaboration and the partnership. It's almost like the outfield pop fly, who's got it kind of thing, and the ball drops. The last thing we want to have happen is build a new facility and not have provision made. However, it's coordinated, hopefully coordinated, not have provision made for ongoing maintenance so that this facility obviously lasts as long as possible. So we would encourage you to work with all of those involved in utilizing the facilities to have some form of budget and long-term plan for maintenance and operations of the facility.
Question. Do you have a letter?
Yes, Commissioner Lytle.
Have you had anything like a letter of support from the county or anything to promote the project and the collaboration that's occurring that might lead to the treasurer's?
I don't have a letter, but I can tell you my son supported it.
That's good. But I meant just to help formalize that.
Okay.
What the treasurer was speaking toward in terms of that, unless they don't like it, the idea. But
oh no, they support the idea.
Yeah.
Okay, I appreciate that. So a maintenance plan.
Yes.
And a letter of support.
And that letter may outline the things that the treasurer spoke to.
Let's go to Commissioner Ogden.
One more comment. I'm in the fire department in Richfield, and I think this is very, very vital to that area as well. One thing that we do in the fire department when there's accidents out there, this would be a generating revenue for them. Obviously, I'm hoping that the EMS is billing the insurances. I'm hoping that the fire department's billing the insurances for things that occur out there on those highways, and that may be, some way to generate some revenue for your building.
I know that the EMS does.
The most expensive thing.
Any further discussion? So the motion before us is a $1,235,000 grant and a $1,235,000 loan, 30 years at 2.5%. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. It'll be on the priority list. We've got some work to do between now and the funding meeting, but we'll see you next month.
What date is that meeting?
It is. What's the date of the next meeting? October
5th.
October 5th.
5th?
Yes.
Okay. I want to thank you. You have made my birthday memorable.
Good job.
Yeah. John?
Just to clarify, that's at 2%. That was the motion, yes.
There's an interesting scenario, and it goes back before my time, but half of Green River was on one side of the river, half of Green River was on the other side of the river, so half of it belonged to Emory County, half of it belonged in Grand County. And somewhere the political gurus convinced Grand County to let Emory County annex the other side of the river. I don't know if that would be possible today, but it was an interesting thing that happened long ago.
Let's go to our next two projects together, are both from Delta City. We'll go to Candace for a review on this.
Thank you. These will be projects 4 and 5. Delta City is requesting a cash match for $30,000 cash for a wastewater study. It will be an analysis of existing system and sewer model of the system based on current population with a 20-year projection and a rate analysis. My question would be, what is the status of the applicant cash? On 3-4-3, DEQ requests that authorization be conditioned upon the Division of Water Quality concurring with the engineering agreement and scope of work. Application project number 5 from Delta City is an actual wastewater pipe replacement. The anomaly here is that they're both asking for a $30,000 grant. They have cash match for both of them. This $30,000 grant is to install 635 feet of 8-inch PVC liner in a collapsed portion of the clay sewer pipe. This will prevent additional pipe and soils failure, and the city needs to install it as soon as possible. My question would be, do they need suspend and fund on that? Discovered during a recent sewer cleaning under Main Street, this pipe replacement. So the top has collapsed into the flow line, and the broken pieces have been removed, but the soil could collapse and cause blockage and backup. If they take 100% loan on this project, it would have the MAGI be 1.08%. My question for the board perhaps would be, does more need to be attended to because this is an older sewer, zero older sewer lines? That's it.
Can you introduce yourselves for us and maybe address those questions?
I'm Gail Bunker, Mayor of Delta City. This is Dent Kirkland, our Public Works Director, and Robert Worley from Sunrise Engineering. It took us a long time to get those two $30,000 to match. We really had to work at that, but actually they just happened that way, and we can't explain why other than they happened. We were seeking, maybe should I address one of the study first? I'll address that the first. Just for you, a little bit of history on Delta and our sewer system, that in the early 20s or 20s and 30s, they put in a lot of clay tile, open joint, to get rid of the groundwater for the agricultural in the area. And so they had these clay tiles around Delta and through with where Delta now is. And then at some point, they decided to, for our sewer system, when they tried to do away with the septic tanks on the individual homes, they hooked into one of those clay tile drains that went out to the river. And for many years, that was their sewage system, was to take it to the lower end of the Sevier River. And and that was the use. And then in the 60s, we put in a, Delta City put in a lagoon ponds, and they redid away with that going to the river. But we still were using some of the clay open joint tile, still as part of our sewer system. And a lot of them have not been replaced. Some have been. But we need to have a study as to help us know what we need to do to make our sewer system viable for the going into the future. The last time that a sewer upgrades or a study was done was back in the early 80s when IPP came to the area, and we haven't had one done since. And so we had planned on doing this study, and then we had this problem. We had a problem on Main Street where we had the clay tile or the clay tile lines, and we've had a couple times when it's collapsed, and most recently was when a part of the pipe broke through and we able to get that out and fix it. But the problem we got is that we're dealing with the state highway there, and we thought that we had until next year before they're going to chip seal it and redo the street or the road there. But they upped it and they already did the chip seal on it. And we were hoping to get this replaced under there, because when you start doing those kind of projects, sometimes things come along that you don't know about. Mm-hmm. And we didn't want to have to dig up Main Street to fix those problems that we couldn't fix without doing so. So we may still have that responsibility when we try to put in the slip to do that. And we've got estimates from people to do that work to put through, so we don't have to dig up the highway to repair that. And so that's why these two projects came together at the same time. But we do have the money budgeted for both of these projects, of the $30,000 for each one of them in our upcoming budget to take care of those two projects. And so that money is there. And so anything I missed?
Let's go to the board for questions.
Okay.
Mr. Zanotti.
So, Mayor, do you have that Main Street project as emergency? You consider that as emergency because of the collapsed soil underneath the pipe?
It's an emergency until it collapses again. That will make it an emergency. We don't know when that will happen. But we don't want to. It's an emergency in the fact the sooner we get it done, the less chance we got of it happening again. It's happened twice that I'm aware of. And one of the times we found that we had to dig up Main Street, and we found old boards, lumber, that had been laid in over the top of that where it had collapsed earlier, but now it collapsed again when the boards all rotted out, and we had to fix that. So how many more of those are down there? We don't know.
So does it matter of the chicken or the eggs? Which one comes first, right?
That's right, and I've never answered that question.
So with the staff, can we just go to number 5 first and go number 4 later? So if this one is emergency, take care of that, and then the study comes later. You can do 2 motions.
Commissioner Winterton.
My question is if we're doing a study to figure out which ones to fix, why don't we just take the money and do one project to fix a line instead of studying which needs to be done? I think it comes back to maybe we need to talk about the sewer project first.
Well, we can talk about whatever. These are both kind of, we've got the applicant up here. We can do either or. Yes, Greg Galecki.
Have you gone to water quality? And this is more of a question for Skyler, but, you know, they deal with projects specifically on number 5. But have you gone to water quality for funding?
We have not gone to water quality for money on this, no.
So is there money available for water quality? Can you? Only loan. Okay. They need to go out.
Skyler, can you come up and say that? I didn't hear it.
And say your name for the record.
So it would be up to the water.
State your name first, please. Thanks.
Tyler Davies for Division of Water Quality. There could be money from the Water Quality Board for this type of project, but the type of funding would be up to the Water Quality Board.
Okay.
Commissioner Lytle.
As the new guy in this case, what's been the protocol relative to the going to the other boards prior to or in and amongst?
Yeah, Candace wants to answer that question.
There was a discussion that perhaps water and sewer should go to the Water Quality and Division of Drinking Water first. In discussions with those boards, they deferred to the applicants deciding where they wanted to go, because we would end up with all the grant because they would award first as the loan. So in fairness, it was decided that the applicant would decide who they would pursue funding for, and we can simultaneously do it. When the project is bigger than this, sometimes both boards will participate equally.
Thank you.
I'll make a motion on number five.
Okay.
That 100% loan at 2.5%.
Do we do loans for $30,000?
No.
It's got to be over $100,000.
A typical, it would be over $100,000 that we would do a loan.
Didn't we say something about the mineral lease money that we put into grants wouldn't go through that whole process of bonding and such? Am I off?
Yes. The infrastructure.
If they keep
it is an extra expense to pursue a loan through the bonding process. What you could do is give them a $60,000 loan and let them keep their cash, and that is a marginable and probably adequate.
Okay, that's my motion.
Size of loan.
At $60,000.
You might want to add $5,000 to it for the bonding.
I make a motion of a $65,000 loan at 2.5% for number five.
Second.
Okay, let me sum this up. This is for project number five, which is the wastewater pipe replacement, a $65,000 loan. What was the term on it?
2.5%.
The term, not the rate.
Oh, term. 20-year.
20-year at 2.5%. The motion was made by Mr. Galecki.
And a comment to remind people on the board is that their Magi is real low. Their rates relative to Magi are very low.
Okay. And a second from Commissioner Mattson. Is that correct? Okay, further discussion to that motion. Yes, Mayor Norton.
Well, along with Mr. Galecki's comment, I would just suggest that they look at possibly raising their rates to build a fund for studies or maintenance of these lines or replacement in the future. That might help build that money a little faster.
I think that we indicated in the study that we were going to address the rate as part of our, at least I'm sure it's there, as I recall it's there. To do that.
Okay. I'm told the payment on this will be $4,068. Okay. Any other discussion to that motion? Okay. The motion on the table is the $65,000 loan, 20-year, 2.5%. This is for project number five, wastewater pipe replacement for Delta City. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
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 Are there any opposed? Adams, Commissioner Ogden, and Commissioner Lytle oppose. That motion carries.
Oh, I had to. As
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Mr. Znati opposes as well. All right.
He's adding quicker.
Okay, 6-4, right? Okay. Yes, still carries. Okay, that's project number five. Let's go back to project number four. Any questions from the board on project number four or motions? Commissioner Ogden.
I'd make a motion that we approve this application as presented.
Second on the motion.
So the motion on the table made by Commissioner Ogden is a $30,000 grant for the wastewater study and seconded by Mr. Zanotti. Any further discussion of that motion? All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Both of those projects will be considered at the funding meeting next month.
Okay. Thank you.
Let's take a 10-minute break, and we'll be back here about 10:20, and we'll consider the rest.
History is actually here for Eureka.
If we could get the board members back in place and get the meeting back to order. Looks like we've got project number 6 up next. This is Eureka City. We'll turn the time over to Candace for the staff briefing on this project.
Hey, Candace, before you start, and I was a little remiss on this, but kind of a reminder for the board. You know, when we had that study, you know, the for the sewer, what the Water Quality Board does is they will do a funding advance, like a study advance. So what happens is that they would have done a $60,000 grant or advance that would be repaid when it got put into a project. So okay, keep that in mind.
Oh, and then one more thing before Candace gets started. We hear that there may be a fire alarm test. Uh-oh. And if there is, you don't need to exit the building. We'll just hope that there's not real flames outside ready to consume us. But that there may be a short test, and we hope that's not the case, because if it's anything like the fire alarm in our building, it will rock your ears, and it's just right here, so just be aware for that. Yeah. Okay, Candace.
Eureka City. This is project number 6 on the agenda. It's a city hall upgrade, so they're not building a new building, but they are retrofitting an old building. The old building is 125 years old. It was originally the Juab County Courthouse. This will provide ADA restroom, storage, new electrical, HVAC, a new roof. Talking with the mayor beforehand, this building has a coal furnace, and it is a specific type of coal they use in the coal furnace, and they are having trouble finding the coal. It has an old roof and an old electrical wiring, which concerns the applicant. The building is on the National Historic Register, and SHPO has been on site. There are some photos included. On 3-6-2, at the top of the financial indicator, it paints the financial picture. So 100% loan, 30-year at 1%, the annual payment would be $12,775, which is close to the 50-50 at 2.5. So just FYI. The June 27th public hearing, there was a good discussion of the project. It indicates a request of $140,000, but there was a discussion to the fact that $140,000 would not be enough. Hence, the request is for $333,000, which appears to cover the costs. Staff was out there. Shad West went out there and did see the building. He took some pictures and had a discussion with the mayor. This is a much-needed project, but I will let the mayor speak to the project.
Thank you. Those of you who aren't familiar with Eureka, which probably isn't very many, Eureka was established in 1869. They found ore out there. It was a thriving mining camp, produced many billions of dollars in ore out there, gold, silver, lead, copper, and zinc. Since the mining industry's died way down. After World War II, it's dilapidated. And
can you make sure you introduce yourselves? State
your
names for the record. Thank you.
I'm the mayor of Eureka, and this is Jeff.
Jeff Albrecht with Savage Albrecht Engineering.
And they're the ones that put together the numbers. When I talked to Shad, he says, the one thing we do not want to do is go to the CIB board and ask them for some money to do some upgrades on the building and then come back in a year or two and say, well, we got that part done, but now we need to do this and this and this. So we decided to make this a very comprehensive, get everything up to date. As Candace said, those of you who are familiar with the coal industry, almost all coal anymore is produced for power plant operations, and they pulverize the coal and inject it. Coal furnaces were designed for oiled slack coal, and that doesn't exist anymore. We're using reject from the power companies somewhat, but it isn't very good. It's a dirty way of heating. If you go down into the basement area of our city hall now, everything's black. Our records are really hard to keep track of because if you put them in a box and the soot penetrates everything, and it's just a mess. So we really, really, really need to upgrade our heating system. And that kind of was what kicked this whole thing off, is when our coal supplier told us that I might be able to get you some coal that you can probably use, but this is probably the last year. They've been telling us that for 3 years so far. We have been able to keep the place warm, but it isn't getting any easier. To Candace's point, the Eureka City Hall was actually built in 1891 as a city hall, and then immediately almost the city outgrew the needs. The city outgrew the capacity of that building, and so in 1899, they upgraded and built a brand new city hall on up the street that could incorporate all of the city offices that were needed. And then in the 1980s, when ADA came into play, it was extremely difficult to upgrade that building to accommodate wheelchair access because it was stairs everywhere. Upstairs was the building, it was the courtroom and the office buildings. Downstairs was city hall, but even to get into the city meeting room, the council meeting rooms, it was a bunch of stairs outside. So it was determined to go back to what had been then turned into the county courthouse, and it was on ground level. And so that's the building we're trying to upgrade now. We are in the ground level building, but it is really, really in need of some repair. We even had the engineers out looking at it, and he says, how are we going to run forced air? It's all hot water, coal-fired hot water now, and the little pipes go through these solid rock walls or rock foundation that are 2.5-3 feet thick. And he said, that's going to present a problem, but we can do that. But it's a building that's worth restoring. Eureka is an historic place, and if I wouldn't want to tear it down and build something new, it would just totally look out of place in Eureka. So we looked at everything after Shad talked to us. We got in touch with Savage and Engineering, and they came up. They've had experience in working with older buildings, and they're the ones that came up with the money, with the amount that we said, this is what it will take to do it right, and do it once. And that's what we would like to do.
Let's go to the board for questions. Mr. Glucky.
First a comment. The Skyline Mine out of Schofield, close to Schofield, Utah, has a full supply of stoker coal. So
we would still rather go to a cleaner source if we can.
Okay. Good clean coal, and it's from high BTU, low ash. But anyway, the other is that has this been coming up for a while? Because I see you don't have any matching money.
Well, the reason there isn't any matching money is we're just completing a sewer and water project that actually is the total cost has been somewhere around $17 million. And we've gotten money from CIB. We had, when we did the closing on this to get this project done, and we're still finishing it up, and we had five different funding agencies, which was, I was told, was probably more funding agencies than they've ever used in anything else. So he says, well, we're kind of at our limits right now on loans and funding, trying to get this all fixed up, you know, get everything up to date. And so right now we just thought, well, let's go for broke. They can, the worst they can say is, sorry, we can't do that, and we'll refigure and come back and see if we can come up with something else. Or hopefully, if you have suggestions, we do have some of the loans that are going to be expiring or getting paid off within the next few years. So there are options.
5 years,
yeah, 5 years out. We could possibly take on some loan money from there, but obviously what we would really appreciate would be a total funding, but that's kind of a pie-in-the-sky thing. We understand that, but we want to get direction from you as to how you feel like we should, how would be best to work out the funding on this and see if we can get it done.
Two more questions.
Okay.
So do you have a maintenance plan that goes along with the building already?
The maintenance plan that we have now, we have maintenance going on, and it would actually cost less to maintain it once we get it up to date. So that would actually be money we could save. Right now, we don't have any insulation, for example, in the attic. And by adding some insulation, putting on a new roof, will actually cut down our costs. So the maintenance would be, that is one of the reasons we was looking at this, try to cut back on maintenance, so that we don't have to spend quite as much of our budget on maintenance as we've got it now.
And then the next question, you kind of hinted to this, and I was going to ask, you have about $30,000 a year that's retiring debt, you know, every year for the next 5 years. Have you already, you know, over-allocated that? Or?
No, we have not.
Okay.
We're hoping to dig ourselves out of debt as much as possible over the next few years.
Okay.
That's been our goal. Along that same line with your original question, by putting in this new sewer and water system, we have also, as we finished the sewer and the water in the, on the same streets, in probably 80% of the streets, we've also resurfaced those streets, so we have new asphalt in most of the city. So for the next few years, we're hoping that our cost of maintenance of the roads, of the sewer system, of the water system will be very low, and we can start putting some money away for future projects.
Are there other questions? Yes, Commissioner Ogden.
Not really a question, but I'd propose to make a motion that we approve this grant as presented by Eureka. Eureka, they have very little, if any, income out there in this old historic site. I think that they want to preserve the building. They don't want to tear it down. Someday maybe they'll have more opportunity for more historic uses out there in that area. But if they tear the building down and put it toward a new building, that's going to cost them more than fixing up the one that's existing.
So the motion on the table from Commissioner Ogden is to grant $333,000.
Second that motion.
There's a second from Councilman Farrell. Further discussion to that motion?
I just want to ask one question about
yes,
the ship or the status of the ship or what is the latest decision on that.
They've been working with us. We just restored the old City Hall, what we call the old City Hall, which was the newer City Hall. And we just put in about $50,000 to do some upgrades on that. But that is the museum for the Eureka Historical Society. And so that's one of the museums. We actually have two museums right there on Main Street. And so we were able to bring that up to ADA compliant and get some things done up there. And SHPL, the way they work it, is we are only able to apply for grants every other year. And so we have a lot of old buildings in Eureka. Okay. And so we're looking at next year probably going into the what is called the Memorial Building, which was the old Carnegie Library that was built back in the early 1900s. And so we have plenty of room for SHPL to get involved and get out there, and they love it. I was talking to one of their engineers, and he said, you know what, this is the perfect example out here that poverty is the best preserver of history, mm-hmm. because there hasn't been enough money available in Eureka to tear anything down and put something new up. There's been no need. Nobody's come in with any money. And so all of these old building faces are still there. The buildings behind them are falling to pieces. So we're trying to work this one piece at a time. We did a survey for Six County came in, and they were for another grant. And the money, they did a survey of the economics of the city, and we're at 62.6% at or below poverty level. So that's one of the reasons we're struggling trying to get things done. We appreciate anything you can give from you guys.
So they have approved the status of the building going forward?
Yes, yes. They've been out and worked with us a lot to try to show us what we need to do and how it needs to go in order to be still compliant stay on. That's one of our primary things, was to stay on the National Historic Register list.
Okay.
And that building is, like I said, it was built in 1891. We don't want to lose it. And we want it to look like it did back in 1891.
One more comment, Mayor. I don't know when was the last estimates on your materials, but according to my knowledge of the market, those estimates for the materials that we have estimated is too low. I hope you have a contingency fund set aside to compensate for extras.
Yes, we do have a contingency fund, and this is very current estimates, so I'm hoping they're up to date.
Yeah, there is a 10% contingency. When we were approached, the budget for the project was more than half of what it, or yeah, half of what that's it is now. So we've tried to be as manageable as possible to try and do it within the means that it could be done. A lot of it is some solid rock in the basement as you pass the jail cells on your way down there. I don't know if any of you have been to the City Hall, but I would go there before we restore it, because there is still the original jail cells are there in the back. But we did find,
for $25, you can spend the night in the jail.
We did find an access through the bottom that goes into the eastern compartment of the building where there is access through a wood floor. So I don't think we're going to have to cut as much concrete as originally anticipated. We're hoping that it'll definitely have to bid well to do what we want to in this budget. But we're not trying to grow this project any bigger than we have to.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Galecki.
I'm going to make a substitute motion, see if what people think. I'm going to go a substitute motion of 75% loan, 25% grant. No, I'm sorry. 50-50 loan, 50 between grant and loan. Payments would be about $10,000 a year. Now, reasoning being is, one, they're retiring a lot of debt. Two, you know, we can really see how much they truly want this building, to see if they have, you know, how much interest they have, because they didn't put any skin in. And then the third, it can help them sharpen their pencil on exactly what they really want to do to maintain the building or to keep it. So my substitute motion is 50% loan, 50% grant, 2.5% for 20 years.
I would second that.
So the motion by Mr. Galecki is a loan of, let's see if I got my math right, $166,500.
Yes.
So a loan for $166,500 2.5% for 20 years, and then a $166,500 grant. That was seconded by Mayor Norton. Comment, comment by Candace.
Loans have to be rounded to the nearest thousand.
That's right. 167.
Do you want to round up or down?
Run it down.
Okay.
Thank you.
The loan would be $166,000 even. The grant would be $167,000. Any further discussion to that substitute motion?
Is there any way to defer some of that for a couple of years until we get some of this paid off?
Like Mr. Glucky.
Sure. How far can we defer it?
Interest will accrue.
Yes.
And defer it.
Let's defer for 3 years.
Tom, is there a limit on the deferral that we can put into a bond agreement?
Not unless it's tied into a funding source that has a limit on it.
Okay. So.
The thing is, interest will accrue upon nothing you pay. You know, it will just, interest will be upon the interest and the principal. So when you can begin paying, it is prudent to begin.
So, Mr. Glucky, back to you on the deferral. They're requesting 5 years after that one bond matures. Is that right?
Correct.
One more comment. The bonds that are maturing are water and sewer, which is a dedicated revenue source that the county
doesn't help this cost.
Okay.
So, if I was hearing Tom correctly, it'd have to be a special exception to get it to 5 years?
No.
No. I did not hear that. Did you hear that question, Tom?
No. It'd be the other way. Generally speaking, there's no limit on your ability to defer payment.
Okay.
Unless there's a fund requirement in a particular funding source.
So,
okay, 5 years.
Well, in other words, they'd have to have a revenue bond election to keep. They're retiring a water bond, which cannot make this payment, so they would have to go through that process in order to make this happen.
That's assuming that's the money they're dedicating to it. They could not, but they have to figure out themselves.
There's a means, right? There's a legal way for them to do
that.
They'd
have to do a general obligation bond.
Mm-hmm. With that being a historic community, and I think that's about their only income is their water. And like you said, I was involved with coordinating 5 funding agencies for 7 years to do that water and sewer deal. And so their water is in a good spot, or will be here shortly. So I think they could depend on that if they go through the legal channels to actually get it moved over once that is paid off.
So, Mr. Galecki, if I can restate, you said a 5-year deferral on your motion. Mayor Norton, is that you still hold your second on that? Mayor Norton?
I'm sorry.
You still hold your second on that with the 5-year deferral?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, Tom.
The issue raised by Mr. Farrell is a real concern, because if there's not a revenue source, it's going to have to be a general obligation bond, and which would take a vote of the people. And they haven't identified a revenue source here that they could pledge to do that. Municipal building authority is one possibility, but with regard to bonding by any governmental entity, it's either got to be a general obligation bond, which requires a vote of the people, or a special fund or revenue bond in order to make it lawful.
So does that prevent us from taking action at this time, or just that they need to do that before we finalize any agreements with them?
They would have to come up with a legal way of issuing a bond.
Right.
So okay. We need a bond, for a vote in the community before the October meeting?
No, it'd be before you would be able to finalize an agreement with us to receive any money.
Okay.
We probably need to add some funds for bonding.
Okay.
Our application, somebody else brought that up earlier. It was a good idea. And it was applied for a grant, so if we're going to do that and have to seek legal counsel, we would need some funds to cover that.
Can be.
How much do you want to add?
Any attorneys here?
$5,000.
5,000 is kind of our typical and number.
I think that's just 10,000.
Okay. Okay. We probably need to go back to the substitute motion maker. Do you want to add in that number in any way, shape, or form?
So what we'll do is 166,000 loan and 176,000, there's 177,000 grant.
Okay. Mayor Norton.
Yeah.
Second. Okay. So the substitute. Yes,
2.5%.
2.5%, 20 years. So the motion on the table, the substitute motion on the table, is $166,000 loan, 2.5%, 20 years, and $177,000 grant, deferred for 5 years, deferred payments for 5 years. Okay. Any further discussion to that motion? So let's vote on that substitute motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Raise your hands on the opposed here. So opposed, Lytle, Ogden, Mattson, and Farrell. Everybody else voted in favor. Are there any abstentions? So the vote is 6-4. That motion carries. So that will be the project that will be in front of us next month at the funding meeting.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman?
Hold on. Tom?
Clarification, there was some discussion with regard to SHPO having access and being involved in this process. You have the duty to make sure that you take into account the effect of this on the project on the historic properties. I would assume that you were intending or believed that they would be following the Secretary of Interior standards in connection with the renovation, which would mean there'd be no adverse effect.
That's correct.
With that understanding, then you're covered with regard to taking into account.
Yes.
But I thought that ought to be something explicitly set forth.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Town of Manila. Candace for the briefing, and we'll invite those participating to come up as well.
Last month, this board entertained an application from the town of Manila for water improvements. It was critical, so it was suspend and fund, and it is now the town of Manila is now coming before the board with a funding request for sewer improvements. It's a sewer pipelining. Prior to discussing this, the applicant has indicated that the request is reduced to $1,250,000 rather than $1,904,000. That would be $500,000. Well, 50-50 of that. I haven't done the math. Just came in, and I will. In 2016, there was a USDA-funded preliminary engineering report to examine project alternatives. The oldest part of the wastewater system, which is deteriorating concrete pipe, is to be repaired by utilizing an 8-inch slip line. Slip lining is when you install a smaller carrier pipe into a larger host pipe, and that's what they'll be doing, then grounding the space between the two pipes and sealing the ends. That is the process that they intend to use for this funding. On 3-7-3, the current MAGI indicates that it is 0.55%. The Division of Water Quality, when considering a loan, prorates their interest rate as to the affordability, which has been deemed to be 1.40 for sewer rates. On 3-7-17, the public hearing discussion indicates that the town has been in behind on getting the money for connection fees, and the application they've indicated a general obligation bond is the type of bond for this project, which requires a public vote. Will this be a sewer revenue bond or will this be a general obligation bond, as is usual for the sewer improvements?
That was a mistake, so it should be a revenue bond.
Okay. Yeah. You will speak to that, the applicant.
Okay. Why don't you state your names for the record and maybe address those questions that Candace raised.
My name is Gretchen Northcott. I'm the mayor of the town of Manila.
I'm Aaron Averett with Sunrise Engineering.
Okay, the first thing I'd like to say to the board is thank you for the funding last month that you gave the town of Manila in the form of a grant loan split for our water improvements project. That was really helpful. We were able to get that project going right away, and that is being out for bid right now with the contractors, and we hope to be digging by the first part of October. So that was very, very helpful, and that I just wanted to tell you thank you for that. By way of introduction for this project, like Candace says, we are here to ask for some help with our sewer system improvement. This was our number one priority before we had significant problems with our water with our last month request, and we had to appear before this board for the emergency funding. This is a very old section of the town that has these old concrete pipes, and we're having a number of serious issues. The majority of the water currently conveyed through this area is through infiltration, and so our capacity of our sewer lagoons is actually filling up quite, it's being really greatly affected by that. And another major problem is our plant root intrusion. We have a lot of cottonwoods in this area, and so they're following the path of water in their...
This time.
This is number 8 on the agenda, Laverkan City General Plan and Transportation Master Plan. They have $50,000 coming from Dixie MPO, which is the Dixie Transportation Advisory Committee also, $1,000 cash from Laverkan City. This project consists of updating the 2005 General Plan and a Transportation Master Plan to address traffic issues to manage future growth and development. My question would be the status of the two sources of cash.
Would you introduce yourselves for the record? Thanks.
My name's Kyle Gubler. I'm with Laverkan City.
I'm Mike Hansen, Rural Community Consultants.
To address the cash, we have a MOU with Dixie MPO. I believe it's actually $49,000 with the MOU, and the city's putting in $1,000 to bring that up to $50,000. It is a, if you don't know the geography of Laverkan, if you're going to Zion National Park, SR 17 intersects with SR 9 right there in Laverkan City. The majority of people that are going to Zion National Park right now, which has had a substantial increase in visitation there that is creating its own issues down there. The majority of the people that are going there travel through Laverkan that give us the need for a transportation master plan. The communities just south of us of Hurricane and the one just north of us, Tokerville, they are both in the process of doing transportation master plans, which is the reason why they MPO come to Laverkan and said that they had funding available to us to do that transportation master plan update, which would coincide with those two plans because they are right there together. And with that, we decided at that time that it would be a good time to probably address the general plan update. General plan was written in 2005, updated in 2009, so we're in need of the time to update that plan. And a lot of the elements of the general plan are included in the it will be included in the transportation master plan. So that's what we're doing, looking forward to moving ahead. So I don't know if you have anything.
Great. Questions from the board.
Mr. Chairman, I move approval.
Second.
Commissioner Mattson moves to approve a $50,000 grant, and that is seconded by Mr. Zanotti.
Should we make a correction, Mr. Chairman? The 50,000 MPU should go 49,000 rather than 50 because they're contributing 1,000 to make it complete.
Okay. That's just a note on the application. That there's still 50,000 match, but it's 49,000 from the MPO and 1,000 from the city. Further discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? That motion passes. We'll see you at the funding meeting.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Aye.
Okay.
Okay, North Logan City. We'll go to Candace for the staff briefing on this and invite them up this time.
This is number 9, North Logan City, for a municipal system optimization review. They have $19,007 in applicant cash, and they have other cash. Their request to CIB is a $40,000 grant. The cash match comes from other entities, which is indicated on 3-9-6. Is this a regional project? North Logan has been mainly agricultural, but has experienced rapid growth and development. Cache County completed a countywide water master plan, which resulted in the creation of a water conservancy district, approved by voters in November 2016. This is a collaboration with the new Cache Water District and the county to develop a system-wide review. This project includes Crockett Avenue Irrigation and Distribution Company. On 3-9-4, can the applicant describe the minor project overlap and how CIB funds will not go to benefit the Crockett Avenue Irrigation and Distribution Company, as it states in 3-9-12. It indicates that no requested CIB funds will be used for the canal company or the irrigation company. The public hearing on 3-9-20 was held July 10th, 2017. The application was submitted June 1st, 2017. In the public hearing, it was indicated that there were some minor errors and updates needed in the application, which will be corrected before it comes forward. It is intended to aid the city with some of the stormwater funds that would be otherwise expended. The review begins in September. CIB funds will not receive approval until October. Are there issues with that?
Thank you, Candace. Why don't you introduce yourselves, maybe address some of those questions that Candace has raised, and then we'll go to the board for questions.
Tom Jensen, I'm Vice Chairman of Logan City Council.
Mark Hurd, I'm Hyde Park City Council.
I'm Zan Murray with JUV Engineers.
Alan Liu, City Administrator for North Logan City. I can address a few of those questions. A little bit of background. The Municipal System Optimization Review, what we're looking at is North Logan City, Logan City and Hyde Park experienced some rapid growth. As you look at our municipal culinary systems, as this is expanding, it's putting demands on our system. It's becoming exponentially more expensive to provide that culinary water. As we look at that, and as our agricultural lands are converted and developed into residential and commercial developments, there's a demand for culinary water. What we're looking at is optimizing using that pressurized system, or pressurizing the system, the current secondary system, to provide that need. That's one of the components of this. One of the other components is obviously stormwater, a benefit to obviously Cache Valley. You've seen the flooding that we experienced in the spring. As we pipe these canal systems, it basically creates large regional detention ponds to handle this stormwater. And the third benefit is from a trails perspective. These canal paths become a regional trail and provide connectivity between the three communities. To answer some of your questions regarding the separation of the use of the funds, the Crockett Avenue Irrigation System, they'll be paying for the water modeling. The focus of their funds will go directly towards the water modeling that will directly benefit them. The cities will not fund that in any way. These funds are going directly towards the system optimization, primarily looking at our land use, our current land use, our future land use, our current water usage, culinary water usage, and our future culinary water usage, and how the pressurization of these secondary irrigation lines could alleviate that.
Okay. Questions from the board? Everybody got quiet after like 10 a.m., so we were all lively. I don't know what, we've hit the wall or something like that. Commissioner Winterton?
Yeah, I had a question here. With what you're trying to accomplish, are you going to be able to do it with this $168,000?
As far as the study and paying for the study, mm-hmm. Yes, my understanding is yes, that will cover the portion, a significant portion of this optimization review and study, and provide us the input we need as far as going back to our city councils and our citizens and being able to allocate those funds as we move forward and to make that decision to move forward.
Okay, and then you already indicated, I had another question, but this is not a pass-through to the irrigation company at all to benefit them, right?
Correct. That is 100% correct. Yeah, these funds will just go towards this optimization review and not towards the irrigation system in any way.
I have questions.
Commissioner Adams.
You're going to put in just under $100,000 in cash, applicant cash and local cash. This board, looks at counties that contribute to this fund a little bit different than non-contributing counties. So I'm wondering if we gave you a $100,000 loan at 2.5% interest for a 10-year period, then you could use your cash to do something else. I think I'd feel better about giving you a loan than I would a grant. That'd be something that you could work with?
I guess my thoughts would be that we could take that back and review that with the groups and with the communities and see what we'd be able to do. Obviously, we've got a couple of council members here as well from these communities. They've already contributed and given opportunity to put cash in at this point. And it is a fairly small amount of grant in the total percentage of the project. And so that may be a consideration as well for the board. Any comment from the council?
Commissioner Ogden, did you have a question?
I was just wondering about the local contributions. Are they all in place with all those people committed? And does that money in place, your cash status for all of those?
Yes. Okay. Yes, those are all in place.
There's an existing cost share agreement that's been signed by all the mayors of the communities based on the overall funding of the project. And then the grants that are obtained will be able to reduce that contributing share based on a percentage of allocation.
That answered my question.
Okay. Mr. Zanotti.
Alan, you didn't answer Candace's last question. So you're scheduled to start in September. The fund is not going to be available until October, after October meeting. So what are you going to do? Is the timeline is going to schedule, is going to change or what?
Yes, I imagine it would be delayed by that month as far as starting the system optimization review.
So after reviewing what the Commissioner Adams says, you would like to go back then, consider it, and talk to your commission before coming back for the final decision? You want to keep the cash and borrow the money or just go as suggested? What would you like to do?
I think for the work that's been done in collaborating the communities together at this point in the cost share agreement and looking at this opportunity for the grant, it would be simpler for the communities to look at the grant. But if the board's inclined to look at a loan rather, then I believe, Councilman, we probably need to go back and discuss that and touch base. Would that be appropriate?
I understand where you're coming from, but I would need to get authorization from the council. We are committed to the funding of the $57,000 that we've already committed to.
I think the other thing that we'll also be looking at is just the revenue source to pay it back. I mean, we're really talking for a study, general obligation bond. I mean, there's really not a revenue source to cover it in any other way. So that would require more than just a council action. So that would be a consideration as well. Mayor Norton.
This may be a silly question, but you said the cost sharing, and with these five entities, it looks like. Well, how did you figure those amounts and left out the $40,000 then that you needed grant? Wouldn't you have just figured that in their cost sharing portion?
great question. as we looked at how to fairly do that, allocate that, the allocation is based on the cost share as a percentage of total project expenditures. So the one of the participants, Hyde Park City, has already received a $25,000 grant from the Bureau of Reclamation. And so the total amount reduces, but the percentages of allocation by each community is the same based on the agreement. And so as if this grant is able to be obtained, then it allows the communities to reduce the total amount, but the percentages stay the same.
Further questions? Yes, Commissioner Lytle.
With that reclamation grant, was that applied to the Hyde Park that you said was to their share or to the total? And then
cost share agreement is such that the grant monies that come in are put into the overall cost of the allocation, and then it's shared out with the percentages. Correct. And that way it's fair for all the communities. The amount of percentage that each community is or entity is asked to participate in with the cost share agreement is based upon the area within the study and how much of the area of the community they have in the study area for the project.
So to absorb that $40,000, it would be proportional?
It would be against the communities based on the cost share percentage. That's correct.
Commissioner Adams.
I'll try a motion. I move that we give them a $100,000 loan at 0% interest, suspend and fund.
I would second that.
Okay. The motion on the table from Commissioner Adams is a $100,000 loan, 0%. Did you
How many years?
State a term?
Whatever would be beneficial, 10 years?
10 years. $100,000 loan, 0%, 10 years. Second by Commissioner Winterton.
That was suspend also.
And suspend and fund. Further discussion of that motion? Mr. Galecki.
Can you go back to how... Candace, you said that they have to, how do they fund that? You said something like they can't be under a regular obligation, general obligation. Do they have to do something special?
Well,
they need to identify a revenue source.
They need to have a revenue source for this, usually, unless they want to pledge something for it, because this is the municipal water system, so it could be water costs. The problem we would have is to assess the costs of each user, because you would have to dedicate some of that to pay for this. And I don't know how you divide it up between all of the entities that are contributing. Daunting.
Can we ask the applicant, do you see a way to identify that revenue source?
You're only asking for $40,000.
As far as the funding for these, the sharing the payments.
Yeah, what would you be dedicating as a revenue source, and the various entities that would be paying for it? Would you? I'm really. This is going to be tricky.
For North Logan, the portions of the funds come from both a stormwater fee and also our water user fees. So both of those tie into this. As for the other.
And you do have revenue from those sources?
Correct.
Okay. Commissioner Adams has given you adequate to accommodate for the bonding portion of it, because he's given you $100,000. He is, and the board, if they vote for that. But we will continue. It is suspend and fund, so this is happening today. Would you like to speak to this, Lisa Nelson? How would the...
Can you come up to the mic? I'm sorry. And state your name on the recording for us.
Lisa Nelson, Division of Drinking Water. In order to make a loan work,
a single applicant would have to step up to the plate and take all the loan. And right now, they are all partnering together for a $40,000 request. The other option is four entities take a portion of that loan, and now you are paying a bond attorney eight times.
Oh, boy.
So as a percent of the request, that can start escalating very fast. And to do a revenue bond, you would need to identify the revenue. Or then you're doing either one or four general obligation bonds. So
Commissioner Adams, the $40,000 request from North Logan City has been accumulated with a lot of other applicant cash. The total cost of this appears to be $168,300. So if Logan City is the only one needing a loan, do the other applicants have their
I'd be willing to amend my motion to give them $169,000 loan at 0% over 10 years.
But still, the challenge is that Lisa mentioned is going to be eight times expense to try to put those entities together.
There could be an interlocal agreement. North Logan City is taking this loan. They're taking the hit. But if you have sufficient interlocal agreements signed, documented, where they're committed to giving you the cash, that will be, you know, that can pay for this. It's going to be very tricky. I would respectfully request, it is not my money and I don't get a vote, but that this be not suspend and fund, but that you look at your possibilities and that we fund this in October.
So amended.
Okay, let me sum up the amendments here. Are we amending the amount as well as the removal of the suspend and fund? So $169,000 loan, 0%, 10 years, not suspend and fund. It'll be considered, it'll be put on the priority list.
If they come,
who was our second on that one? Was it
Ron Winterton?
Commissioner Winterton, okay. All right, motion on the table, $169,000 loan, 0%, 10 years to be put on the priority list.
I think there was a question from the applicant.
Oh, I just wanted to understand the suspended fund aspect of things. I apologize for not...
So suspended fund, which does not apply anymore, would just mean that we have our funding meeting next month where we review all the applications again, make a final decision before we enter into contractual agreements. A suspended fund means that we've suspended that process. We would just start entering into the financial agreements.
Well,
if they could meet
the parameters of the loan, suspended fund really allows them to go ahead and start the work right now. That more than anything, we're not going to write you a check. I wish we could, but we won't write you a check today if we spend it. Fund. It just allows you to start the project earlier.
Okay.
At least that was my intention.
Yeah.
The payment on a $169,000 10-year loan is fairly obvious. It's $16,009 a year.
But there's no penalty if they paid it off sooner, right?
No.
No.
So, you know, they could take their money that they've gathered up and then figure out how they're going to pay for it.
With the $169,000 loan, there is now just coverage of the cost of the optimization. So there is no loan. There is no bond attorney.
So you need 10 more? Huh?
Yeah.
No, you might need...
How about we give them $180,000? I'll amend my motion to give them $180,000 loan, 10 years.
Fine. The board can authorize your loan. You don't have to take the whole amount.
That's
so
right.
This gives you the wiggle room to pin down what will be needed for the administration or bond attorney costs and then get the optimization study accommodated. But once again, this is a loan to North Logan City, not all the entities.
Correct. Commissioner Winterton, I see a head nod. You're still hanging in there on this one. So, okay, motion on the table, amended motion, a $180,000 loan, 0%, 10 years.
Question?
Yes, Commissioner Lytle.
So, did you really cover the bond attorney with that?
Yeah.
Yes.
That's 10 grand.
Well, for one entity.
Well, no.
No.
There is only one entity. This is North Logan City.
They can work out the details with the other guys.
Understood. Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Oh, okay. Unanimous. So
it was simple, Jonathan.
Yeah, it was simple. So that's on the priority list. We'll have a discussion next meeting about it.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
No, it's 180,000.
That's what I mean. For 10 years. That's what I mean.
So that concludes the new projects. We have a supplemental request. We'll turn it over to Candace to do a briefing on Price City.
This is Price City, number one supplemental request. It is it's the 2016 emergency flood improvements supplemental. Their request is $500,000 total CIV. Of that, it's the same breakout as the original funding that you will see on page 4-1-1. That's where it starts. The review sheet is 4-1-3. Original funding was $975,000 grant, $325,000 20-year at 2.5%. New request, the supplemental request, is for a $375,000 grant, $125,000 20-year at 2.5% loan, same percentages that the original funding went out, for a total of, and this loan has not closed, so this funding has not been utilized, it's not available. This would put it at $1,350,000 grant, $450,000 loan, for a total of $2 million for this emergency flood improvement study or project. It's not a study. It was funded originally by the board on December 8, 2016. The design of the repairs indicated there was more damage than reported, more complicated, and design requirements from FEMA included permits for repairs in the floodplain area. So as they got into the project, they were starting it before they even utilized any CIB monies. They have expensed some of their own cash to come to the fact that they didn't have enough money. They are asking for the same scenario. The total, as indicated, is on 4-1-3. They have not submitted any requests for reimbursement. The loan is not closed. The funds have not been placed in construction escrow. My question is, how much work has been done to this point? On 4-1-5, Price City indicated that this is to make repairs to three areas that were cut from the project because of cost. They are asking for an additional $500,000 in emergency funds. Does this cover all three areas now? And what is the status of the project?
Please state your names for the record and maybe answer some of those questions that Candace raised.
Mr. Chairman, I have a clarification from Candace.
Okay.
On page 4-1-3, 125,000, you have 0 year at 0%. It's supposed to be 20 at 1.5 years?
Yep.
Okay, we need to make that correction.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Miles Nelson, Public Works Director for Price City.
And I'm Russell Seeley, the Price City Engineer.
Mm-hmm. And we really appreciate this opportunity to come back to the board to present our supplemental request. And to answer the questions, I'll defer to Russell first.
So yes, exactly as Candace said, we came to the board last December to ask for some funding for flooding that happened almost a year ago. And our original assessments right after the flooding indicated a smaller amount than what was necessary. Once our funding was approved, we hired an engineering firm, and as we got digging into the sites, we realized that some of the structures were undersized and couldn't quite do what we intended them to do to help protect the city. We're coming to ask for some additional funds. What we decided to do was to divide the project, cut some of the areas out of the scope of the project so that progress could move forward. We are right in the middle of our construction project. I would say we're close to 40% done with the structures that we've started with, so progress is moving forward. And so this additional funding would go towards the three sites that were damaged last year, as well as cover some of the contingency that is expected with the ongoing construction right now.
Okay, Commissioner Winterton.
Okay, I'm a little bit foggy on, I thought that the city had their own engineering.
Yes.
And looking at the costs, it looks like it's pretty high. If the city's doing the engineering, where are those costs coming from?
The city is not doing the engineering. I'm the engineering department, and so we've outsourced that, and we're supervising and overseeing that engineering work. And most of that engineering has to do with the FEMA CLOMAR permits to change the floodplains in order to install these structures. So it's fairly complicated, involving computer modeling, flood modeling, and things like that.
So all of the engineering then is outsourced to another?
Yes.
Okay. How did you come up with the engineering group? Did you just go out and select somebody, or you, how was procurement on that?
So we normally we put out for a request for qualifications on a project of this size and select from different engineering firms. In this case, because we needed to start quickly back in December, we suspended that under an emergency basis. We picked Jones and DeMille, which is a company that is very familiar with our community, and we've done a lot of work with them to move forward with this project.
All right, thanks. Mr. Zanotti?
Have you approached NRCS and then Lisa? She has a deep pocket. She can give you all the money you need. She is the richest woman in the Babylon.
We have worked with the NRCS, and if you'll recall back in December, when we were asked similar questions, the amount of damage to our community didn't quite meet the threshold for assistance, federal assistance through the NRCS or through FEMA to help with this project. And so we're kind of stuck right in the middle there. It's too large for Price City just to take on by itself, but it's not quite big enough that we could get additional assistance.
And what was the DQ? Did they have any answer for you?
No, we were unable to do that through the Division of Water Quality.
Thank you.
And we're very grateful again for the support. Last year, when we came to the CIB, we asked for 100% grant, we came away with 25% loan on the project, and we're very, very happy with that. We felt it was appropriate to come ask the CIB for the same mix as what was granted last time with a 2.5% loan on 25% of the funding.
Commissioner Adams.
You know, it's hard to predict when you're going to get a flood. I mean, it'd be nice if we could predict that kind of stuff. And driving through these communities and watching what happened with the flood, there was enormous damage, and a lot of that damage was to impacted elderly people in Helper, right? A lot of those people, we dealt with it on the AOG, and I just think this is one of those situations where we're not talking about a want, we're talking about a real big need to some people that really need the help. And, you know, if they could have predicted exactly how much it was going to cost the first time, I would have been surprised. It's just hard to predict all of that stuff. And with that in mind, I move to approve the request.
Second.
So the motion from Commissioner Adams is a supplemental $375,000 grant and a supplemental $125,000 loan, 20 years at 2.5%, seconded by Treasurer Damshin. Any further discussion of that motion?
Just
suspend and fund.
Is that what you need?
Yes.
Suspend and fund?
Okay. Any supplemental is the spending fund. Okay. That's what I'm being whispered. Okay.
Great.
Any further discussion of the motion?
I have one question.
One question, Mr. Zanotti.
In the past, you had indicated that 40% of the money is going to go for flood mitigation. Have you changed that percentage or is it still the same?
In regards to what do you mean by flood mitigation?
You had indicated that 40% of the money you get in from the CIB will be for the flood.
Yes.
Still the same percentage.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, seeing no further questions, all in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, motion passes unanimously. That is the spending fund. Thank you. We've got an item for special consideration item. This requires a vote of the board to bring it onto the agenda for consideration. Motion by Mr. Zanotti to consider this project. Is there a second? A second from Commissioner Ogden. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Great. Candace, give us the brief rundown here, and then we'll have Town of Huntsville speak to it.
This is the special consideration item on the agenda. Town of Huntsville, water system improvements. They have a request for a change of scope. They want to drill a new well. There is no additional funding being requested. It's just a board authorization to do a slightly different scope of the same water system, and it would require a vote of the board. Originally, it was water lines to and water shares from the Hermitage Monastery. Is that right?
Yes.
Did I call it the right name?
That's right.
In 2015, Huntsville received $606,000 from this board to construct storage ponds and pipelines to provide treated water to the monastery and acquire water shares currently owned by the monastery from the Bennett Springs. On February 2016, Huntsville wanted to drill a well. CDBG funded and accommodated that, and there was no need for a change of scope. Though CIB funding was only used to pipe the water, as was the scope of work that the board authorized, the Nugget Well did not provide enough PSI. The Huntsville project has taken many turns, and this request for a change of scope is to utilize the remaining CIB grant funds to drill another well and pipe it to the treatment plant. As of Wednesday, August 30th, there was sufficient funding remaining in the escrow to do this project. Huntsville indicates that after the installation of the pipe to connect the well to the treatment plant, there should be about $130,000 left, and they say that they are really eager to use these funds. CDBG has funded a portion of this project, and we do have Cheryl Brown in the audience with us. She is the fund manager for the Community Development Block Grant. We are joint co-funders in this project, so if you have any questions concerning those funds, it is there. But what this is really for is just to continue using the available funds that they have to adequately accommodate their water system in Huntsville, and they can speak to that.
Introduce yourselves and maybe tell us your opinion on the project.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Richard Bay. My full-time job is general manager of Jordan Valley Water Conservancy District that provides drinking water to most of Salt Lake County. But today I'm appearing in my part-time volunteer position as chair of the Town Water Committee and as a resident. And I'm accompanied by Gail.
I'm Gail Alstrom. I'm the Huntsville Town Clerk.
This project is very important to the town because with water being the most essential public service, the town has a single source coming from the Bennett Spring. And so this project has involved, with oversight from the Town Water Committee, a feasibility study, and then identifying a project that has elements, water pipelines, well drilling, and equipping. And Candace has done a very good job of summarizing where we're at. The drilling of the first nugget well was disappointing, as sometimes happens. And so the request is not requesting any additional funds, but expanding the scope to allow the remaining funds And our estimate is about $115,000.
It would be $130,000.
Okay, so $130,000 of the $606,000 originally approved could be used for drilling of a second well and not strictly held to only water pipelines construction. The town is very appreciative of the funds that have been approved with grant so far, and this is a very important project for the town.
Questions from the board? Commissioner Winterton?
Well, I think it's appropriate. I mean, it's not new money, so for me it's not a hard sell. I would make a motion that we approve the change of scope on this project.
So, that's what he said.
Okay. I've got a motion to approve the project from the change of scope from Commissioner Winterton, and second from Treasurer Dampson. Discussion on that motion. I saw some hands, so, okay,
well,
Mr. Galecki.
I don't know if you guys can answer these questions, but I have significant questions about the hydrogeology of it. It seems like the first well only produced 35 gallons per minute. So what do you anticipate to get out of this new well?
The first well was drilled in a sandstone formation.
Right.
It was expected that the secondary permeability would be much greater with fracturing. We didn't encounter that. The second well could be drilled within that same formation, and we're also looking at moving a little bit southward into a carbonate formation that is expected to yield more.
I guess where I'm going from it seems like you're just plugging wells. It seems like money is probably better spent on studying to ensure that you have the right target aquifer before drilling another well.
The town did hire a hydrogeologist, and
but their work on that from Laughlin Associates is pretty much just it's not any preliminary work. It's really overseeing the drilling of the
well.
Of the
he was involved back in 2015. We pulled him and Stantec in, and they did a feasibility study, and they were the ones that kind of marked a couple well sites.
And they did a drawdown test and such?
Yes.
And so they feel confident of the sustainable yield in that area for what you're trying to get?
Yes.
Okay.
Further discussion or questions to that motion? Candace?
Division of Drinking Water said that they would like to be involved prior to any activity. You need to get plan approval from them. So
yes.
Make sure.
And
you
we're aware of that. And I reminded our hydrologist of that, and he said he had all intentions of doing that. He knows the procedure. Yeah.
Okay, seeing no further questions, all in favor of that motion to change the scope of work?
Aye.
Say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion carries unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for all your help.
Thank you. The last item on our agenda is the discussion. I think we have Chris Merritt here from the State Historic Preservation Office to discuss Leland Bench. Is that what I'm hearing? Or other thing, general. Okay. Okay. Board's obligation to SHPO. Thank you. All right. We'll turn the time over to you.
Hi, I'm Brad Westwood. I'm the State Historic Preservation Officer.
Yeah.
And with me is Chris Merritt, Dr. Chris Merritt, our archaeologist and deputy SHPO. And we're pleased to be with you to talk with you about what we do in SHPO and how we can closer with your with this committee. I'm going to turn the time over to Chris Merritt.
And so we also have one other SHPO-ite in the audience, Chris Hansen, who's our architectural reviewer. So in our office, we typically split the reviews up to archaeology. I'm an archaeologist and a built environment, so architecture. So he handles the architecture. I handle the archaeology. And so I do want to note Dwayne Shepherd, commissioner for UNA County's here, and it's related to Leland Bench. And that's what brought us here today, but I want to talk broadly, too. So maybe as the preface, we'll begin with 98404, Utah Code Annotated. It's the state law that governs the agency's responsibility to cultural resources. And in that law, it says before expending state funds or approving any activity, you must take into account your actions on historic properties. Tom Roberts, who's our AG over at State History as well, already articulated that a little bit earlier. So if you read both the federal law and the state law, which are tiered kind of off each other, it's really a forethought. Plan ahead. And so when we ran into Leland Bench, we ran into a problem that it wasn't planned ahead. And some of the issues that were encountered might have been avoided and mitigated. I will want to point out very directly, Uinta County and the Special Service District have been tremendous to work with. They've been really flexible in finding an alternate solution to the issue. So let's talk about the issue on Leland Bench. So the road encountered during grading of a side ditch, they encountered a burial. Our office responds to human remains recoveries on private land and non-state land. So that includes SILA. And so our office responded. We didn't understand at the time that it was a CIB-funded project. Under our statute, that CIB connection or a federal connection or any state connection means it's on the responsibility of the agency to do that removal. We didn't know that at the time. We responded immediately. We showed up the day after the phone call. We found the human remains, which looks like to be a historic period ute. We started responding, but once we figured out the CIB was involved, we called Candace, we had the county commission and the attorney there, and we worked through a solution. We recovered one set of human remains that will come under a fee system that had already been approved. But as we were cleaning up that one discovery, we encountered a third and a fourth. So there's additional burials, probably a family plot from our assessment. So in conversations with the county and the Special Service District and their engineer, the road has been proposed to be realigned to leave the other burials where they remain, which is our best solution. We don't want to dig up anybody's ancestors if we don't have to. But the life lesson here is that that road, because it's being state-funded, even though it's a reimbursement, it's being approved and facilitated by a state agency. We would have typically first requested that an archaeological survey be conducted on the road alignment. As we drove out on the last day of the recovery, we noticed that the road, as it's staked, is going to weave its way between several historic homesteads, which also meet the definition of an archaeological site. So if we know some of these costs and know some of these issues beforehand, we can better plan. And so I appreciate Candace's opportunity to speak to you all today to think of ways that we can better do preemptive discussion early and often with your applicants that are coming to this board, but also you. You feel free to reach out to us and ask questions, same as you did today to the people coming up and asking for money. One other thing that I thought might be useful for this body and its applicants is maybe having in the application a checkbox that requires them to have contacted our office. Now, master plans, transportation plans, paperwork exercises we're not as concerned about as infrastructure improvements, road widenings, all those sorts of things that have been discussed, the larger ticket items. Because the last thing I want to have to do is have the applicants come back to this body and ask for more money to assess something that they didn't plan for. And so our job is we're very proactive. We prefer to work with people well in advance of a project's implementation versus being a reactive, because usually when you're reactive, slowdowns, shutdowns, costly delays when you already have equipment and personnel mobilized.
Chris, let me say something.
Yeah.
One thing crossed my mind. I just want to stop and acknowledge Dr. Merritt because we did something I think that's a part of what we do in Utah. We figure out a solution and we do it as quickly as possible. Because my deputy was on the on site with our anthropologist and the staff and folks in Vernal, we were able to come up with a solution rather quickly that I think is going to save the state a lot of money and trouble, because otherwise we could have just kept going at finding these remains and perhaps even doing something of a, you know, something that wouldn't be too good in the press. And so what I find more and more is that because we try to interact early and we gain the trust of various agencies we work at, we try to make sure we can meet this law and still do the business of the state. And so that's why having this time to meet with you is so important for SHPO. We can help you with all those issues.
And so just to put the cost in perspective, we recovered the one set of human remains. We will run them through our process. We've taken the task of analysis and discussion with the tribes. But if this had been a private consultant that had to be mobilized and additional burials would have to be removed, you're talking well over $100,000 very quickly. And it could have escalated if we found more as we kept going. And so the road realignment to push it back further away, cap it, and preserve it in place is going to save a lot of money and also much more respectful to the people that are related to that individual. So we're just here to say we're good help. We want to help you all. We want to help your applicants. We want to help everyone through this process. We work very closely with CDBG as well, Cheryl Brown, and all state agencies. So whatever we can do to assist you, we are happy to do. Oh, got some questions there.
Yes, Mr. Galecki.
Only a quick question.
Okay. Now, that wasn't like a sarcastic throw over there. So.
Corridor. So the NEPA process is already being followed, and then during construction, additional things were, you know, the burial was located after the during construction, not, and it wasn't located prior to the original NEPA process.
Correct. Now, I wasn't involved in the NEPA process. I don't know what's going on.
No. I'm just wondering, because typically that would have been followed, as the NEPA process would do the cultural resources.
Yeah. So
they're two separate laws, but frequently most agencies will have people that are engaged in both the cultural as well as the environmental.
Yeah, and so the reactive part is the real scary part. We might not have seen anything on the surface, but I assume we would have. Outside the road cut, there were additional prehistoric materials plus historic artifacts. So likely an archaeologist would have flagged that something was there, and then a plan could have been in place to either realign the road to avoid it completely without disturbance or have a plan so in case X happens, Y response. So the state law is really planning, and it's meant to save money, really.
Mr. Zanotti.
So, Chris, in this case, you... best solution was the realigned road. Let's go further as the second option. If you could not do the realignment, that's the only alternative we have, which we deal with the UDOT. What is the process of removing the remains, and are you doing the restoration until the family gets notified? Do you have a temporary accommodations, or you have just the location designated, and you move the bodies directly there?
Okay, great question. So, if the road could not have been realigned, we would have backed away. Okay. That would have had to been the county and the special service district and the engineering firm to hire a private consultant to do the removal because of that state connection. So let's say we did have to remove the other sets of human remains, which may be up to 3 to 4. Archaeologists would have been called in. They would have excavated those very carefully, removed each set of remains individually. Our forensic anthropologists would have assisted then in analyzing those sets of human remains, determining if they're Native American or not. And then we go through a very rigorous process of trying to determine first lineal descent, and where it's historic period, maybe 1890s, there's a chance that we could identify a family that this could go back to. Next step, we go to territorial homeland. So who currently claims this area? And then we go back to who currently lives in the area. So we try to first repatriate those human remains to someone that wishes to claim them. If they're unclaimed, we have a burial vault that these remains can go into. In the last decade plus, we've done several dozens recoveries, several repatriations, but it's a multi-year process. We work closely with the tribes through our sister division of Indian Affairs, who works with them. And so it's lengthy, it's time-consuming. But, yeah, ultimately the hope is to get the burial back in the ground, back in a respectful setting.
So that will be extending the project for 2 years until you get the answers?
Typically, once we remove them, the road may continue.
Okay.
We have a statute that says we have 48 hours, or actually extended period of a week or so. But we get that done very quickly. So we try not to slow things down. But the overall process would take more than a year's time.
Yeah, so the actual recovery, given the complexity, I assume would have taken a couple weeks. But once the recovery was completed and all proper T's had been crossed, the project could proceed.
Well, I want to personally, on behalf of UDA, thank you and the organization. You've done a fantastic job for us. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to accomplish anything in southern Utah.
Well, you know, when you think of 13,000 years of human activity here in Utah, there's a whole lot of people who have lived here. So it's a task we try to work for on behalf of the state.
Thank you.
Is 13,000 years conservative?
Yes. Well, actually, known human activity, archaeologists will tell you anywhere from 11 to 13.
Commissioner Ogden.
I just had a question. If the NEPA has been done on these roadways, both sides of a highway, I mean, hasn't that already been done, the cultural studies? I mean, I'm just trying to get an understanding of that. How does that work that they had missed this, that they'd already done that?
It's my understanding where this is a county or a special service district project with the county involvement, and it's on private land. I don't know if NEPA was done. I know that no cultural resources were done. Okay. I do know that much. And so that's the conversation that we could have had if we known this project was moving forward. I would have recommended a survey. Given how much the development's occurred in the basin, Uinta Basin, we would have obviously identified there's high potential for archaeological sites and human remains.
Was there a federal nexus on this project? Was there BLM lands crossed?
We don't know.
Point Shepherd, Uinta County Commissioner. No, there's no BLM land involved in this at all.
Okay, so that's why that one of the reasons that would have gone.
Right, they're very careful, actually, to avoid any tribal land or BLM land on this particular
on that road.
And to speak to the continuing efforts to make sure that that we don't have these incidents again, and you know, that we've been working very well with Dr. Merritt to make sure that. We have people in front of us, you know, walking those paths to make sure that that's we don't run into this again. So, anyway, on this particular project, and we will advise as we submit these projects to the UTSSD to make sure that we don't have any issues in the future.
Was there a recommendation for policy, or how does that work in terms of a checkoff?
That was my question. We do have in the summary of these, when you come to apply for CIB, you're supposed to check with SHPO. A checkbox is a good idea, but as far as the board is concerned, there are keywords that we can look for in any application, and one of them is the realignment. If you ever see a road that is going to realign anything, then that's this board is very good about knowing that it's a 50-year-old or older building, but the realignment of a road has a tendency to get into this sticky wicket.
And I would add that if you hear ground disturbing in any way on a project, including a sewer line replacement, it's probably a good idea to flag those. So typically we say if you're disturbing the ground in any facet, let us know. I mean, we have agreements with UDOT to, you know, chip sealing and some of these very limited actions to exempt that. But if you're actually ground-disturbing native soil, you know, that's probably where you need to be calling us.
One of the issues that comes up, why it often gets mentioned, and I usually phrase it to this board with regard to you have the duty to take into account the effect. Uinta County isn't governed by this statute. So they don't have the duty. You have the duty to make sure that whoever is doing the project, the county, provides you with the information so that you can take into account the effects. What your rule currently provides is that any applicant is supposed to provide a description, very detailed description of what their project is going to entail. Your staff then forwards that on to the SHPO. So they can get an initial look saying what's the likelihood of something happening here, and that process can start. It's my understanding usually then if there's a chance, then the direction goes to your applicant to say you need to work with SHPO. We heard that today with regard to the one remodel where I said, you know, you need to do it in accordance with Secretary of Interior standards so there's no adverse effect. So it's directing the applicant to follow the law, talk to SHPO, and get the information back. Your rule also requires that if they find something they didn't expect or didn't know about, they're required to stop the project, contact you so that you can have the information so you can decide whether or not the project ought to go forward. The provisions they're talking about, obviously not every project is going to involve the potential for SHPO planning. You know, you're looking for something that's a ground disturbance or disturbance of the structure. And so the board might want to, staff might want to work with SHPO's office to see about tightening up your rules with regard to how this process goes forward to see if maybe there ought to be a direct requirement of the applicant working with SHPO and getting back to you, have that spelled out more accurately.
Just so you know, the contract is being amended. It does reflect all of the SHPO requirements with this project. And it will be resubmitted. CIB has not put any money into this yet. Recall it was a Highway 40 bypass road, and it originally was funded, and then they came back and withdrew that project, and it became the Leland Bench project. And so it's gone through several iterations. I don't know what the status of it is now, but there will be a new contract issued with, or has been, which they must sign, and there will be no money going forward until SHPO has signed off and is satisfied.
That process is not laborious either.
No.
Our early interaction, we do a good deal of training and engagement with the agencies, and in so doing, and oftentimes I think we offer real value economically, because there's ways of getting all that you want to have done, the state's business, and also historic and cultural resource. I think, and maybe this is just because we're all so optimistic, we feel like we can accomplish all those things. And so a checkoff and our early involvement, usually it takes less than 48 hours. We have 30 days to make our determination. I think we're no more than how many days?
We do 15 days or less.
So we try really hard.
So I might just suggest that staff come forward with a recommendation in the next one or two meetings of maybe some suggested changes we could do in our process to help mitigate some of these issues that have arisen.
May I add one more thing? Through all this process, identified in the MOU that the Transportation District has with the county, and that's actually one place where we can actually add this in there, because the MOU right now only states that the county has to include with the submission of the project to the UTSSD for their acceptance that we provide right-of-ways upon our letter submitted to them. And along with that right-of-way, we can actually, we'll get together with the MOU, with the Transportation District, change that MOU a little bit to include SHPO process and whatnot too. So we'll be proactive at this.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. We'll come back with some recommendations for the board to consider in application or policy process. Is there a motion to adjourn? Okay. Mayor Norton suggests we adjourn. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right. Thank you.
Hey. We have time to even come to these meetings.